Blog Talk Radio.
Time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find us on the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. Tonight, we will have some special guests on, and tonight it will be the members of Sheppo Team, the pro-American comic, and tonight we will talk about their comic book, Promoting American Values, as well as illegal immigration, the ongoing wars, and being pro-American during an anti-American world. And at this time, I believe I have them on the line, so let me go ahead and open up the mic. Thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Robert?
Good, good. How are you? And welcome to the show.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
And I know you gentlemen only have about 40 minutes with us tonight in our conversation. And for those who would like to hear more about the Sheppo Team, check them out on Facebook by going to your search engine and just putting in C-H-E-P-O and then team. And then also you can check the archives for the podcasts of our previous show. Been on about 9 months ago on our show. So if folks want to hear that episode, go back and check that out. It was a great show. So how are things going at this time, y'all, gentlemen?
So far, good. I mean, we've been doing some advances on the comic. We're thinking about in September to have the comic ready, because we're thinking about putting it as an ebook. We may start doing some printings, because we had a lot of people telling us, you know what, you should be doing t-shirts, you should be publishing this, I want to see this on the newspapers. So we're like, you know what, we should start doing something about that.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, we also recently submitted it to a pitching thing that NBC has to see if we can try to get it on TV too. I mean, it's a long shot, but we're also trying that too.
And I've read some of the comics. I think it'd be a great animated series.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. That's the goal. By the way, hi Robert, this is Bernardo. By the way.
Hey, how you doing, Bernardo? How's it going?
All good, all good. Just got in here. Everything good.
Welcome. It's definitely great having you guys back onto the show. So tell us, go ahead.
Sorry about that. And tonight we also have Orlando. He's the other writer of Sheppo Team. He was not in the other show last time, but because he just couldn't make it. But tonight he's here.
Awesome. It's great to have all three of you on. How you doing?
Good. Welcome to the show. Thank you. I wasn't here on the last time you guys interviewed my brothers, but I'm here today. I'm glad to be here. Orlando, by the way, is my name.
Orlando? God, it
yes,
was
sir.
Great to have you on. So since we didn't hear your take on, you know, the origins of Shepherd Team and how you got involved in it with your brothers, but what were your thoughts when you first when you guys first started talking about it?
Well, we always my brother has always been an artist since we were kids, and he always used to draw. And one day here, when we came to this country, one day we decided we should put something together that we had great ideas with me, Bernardo, and Juan Pablo. And since Juan knows how to draw very well, as you can see online, we decided to put something together. And you know, we try every day to look for new ideas and see what we can put online. And, you know, we keep working every day on it since we started.
Okay, what are some of the content of some of the episodes that you guys have recently?
Well, right now we have the episode posted online. It's called Enemies Forever. So it's kind of like the origins of Chepotin. We do have some episodes that we have written, and even my brother has completed the drawing, but we haven't posted any of those online. We're waiting to, right now, like as my brother said earlier, we want to do the ebook, publish an ebook, and after that we'll try to post new things online.
Hey, but hey, this is Juan Pablo. But I gotta tell you, some of the episodes that we posted from the episode Enemies Forever, some of the episodes they have come true. I mean, I remember that we posted an episode about actually immigration. That there was in the episode there was open borders and a lot of bad people are starting coming in, and actually that's what's been happening right now. We also posted an episode long time ago about what if a person, well, in this case, an alien, wanted to be popular as a president, and when he became president, he just wanted to be loved, not to be involved in with the military exercises and all that. And look what's happening. ISIS right now is taking over Iraq. I mean, and the world is becoming more dangerous. So every episode that we'll be posting, I mean, many episodes that we'll be posting have some relation with what's happening right now. I mean, it's all
Obama not doing.
Yeah, like Obama not doing anything. It's like science fiction. I mean, we post science fiction, but it's kind of coming true. So
the things that we put to make fun of liberals is actually in part true. What we put is the reality of how they behave, how the actions they do. And for example, like my brother was explaining, Obama being the president and not doing much as far as foreign policy right now. When, as you can see, the terrorist uprising in Iraq, all the consequences that his laziness and inability to take action causes or to lead.
So yeah, all the posts that all the cartoons that we've been posting about Obama and bad policies that make no sense are starting to become a reality. So we're now even more eager to publish our comic book.
But you know what? I also said one of the regulars come here. Her name is Harriet. She's great. She comes on the show a lot. And I believe you guys were here when you know, she was on the you know, came to the show as well. And so she sent a link to me last night. Worldview War on America's Borders was the title. It's a video clip. What I'm going to do is I'm going to send it to you folks, and let's see if I can get the a couple. I'm going to send it to you guys there on Facebook, and I watch it. It's about a 1-hour video, and we'll be talking more about it tonight, but I'm going to go ahead and, Juan, send you the link. And I'm thinking perhaps watching this video may give you guys some more ideas of something you could incorporate into one of your comics.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I mean,
some of the things going in.
Yeah, well,
oh, you're welcome. Yeah, watch it, see if it's something that would fit well with, you know, what you guys do within the comic, and perhaps you can use that to get information about this. They're talking, you know, it talks about asymmetrical warfare and how the progressives are trying to use the illegal immigration crisis is what the government's trying to put it as a smokescreen to try to get, you know, other, you know, especially when all those children are coming up from the Central America, things of that nature, and diverting a lot of attention on that and a lot of resources on that instead of the borders. So one of the questions I want to ask you guys before I bring Dan in, and I want to bring Dan in because he was not, he's our contributor here on the show, and he did not get the privilege of being able to speak with you folks when you came on 9 months ago. So I'd like to be able to give the opportunity for him to talk with him and him to talk with you. So, but first, I want to get your take on, you know, what your thoughts and feelings are of these young folks coming up and just being pretty much catered to coming here illegally where, you know, you folks, you know, took the right measures to become a citizen.
Well, yeah, that's a slap on the face to every legal immigrant that came here to the United States, do it the right way, pay a lot of money to become residents and eventually become citizens. I mean, at the end of the day, it makes you think like, wow, you know, if a person who came here and became a citizen, he would think, man, like, I spent probably more than 10 years trying to be getting a residency and becoming a citizen, and then you just jump the fence. You get a person that is even illiterate in their own language, jumps the fence, and then gets treated as a first-class citizen, even gets treated better as American citizens, and they get the privileges of getting amnesty pretty much and getting benefits. So yeah, it's horrible and it's sad because the politicians, the Democrats use this as a tool to get more voters. They know that these illegal immigrants, since they're illiterate, it's not like we're having nuclear scientists jumping the fence. We have people that are literate in their own language. They'll probably end up in welfare. Maybe some of them, they do work hard, but most likely they will end up in welfare. And since they're not very well educated, they'll be easily lured to the false promises that the liberals and Democrats promise them. You know, all the garbage that they always promise and they preach, you know, like more like equal opportunity stuff like that. But they brand it as compassion or yes, we want to help you. But at the end of the day, they just want to have them as Democrat voters and as pawns, you know, control them, and just, so for them, it's just a political tool to use these immigrants, and for the Republicans, it's also despicable because most of the Republicans are trying to appeal, trying to work for the Chamber of Commerce, who the Chamber of Commerce wants these foreign workers. So they give me a lot of money to these Republican establishment candidates. Once they get elected, they will deliver for the Chambers of Commerce. So none of these most of these people in power, they're doing what's good for them, and not what's good for these people coming in, or what's good for America overall. So it's sad and it's bad, and if they get away with it, it's scary what can happen.
Yeah, certainly, and definitely check that out. The Worldview War on America's Borders. Check that link out. That talks a lot about what you guys were saying, and of course, you know, a lot more. It's about an hour video. You know, you guys get the time. And speaking of working, I know you guys. We've had you on the show before. I mean, you guys work a lot of hours. I mean, you know, a couple of you have 2 to 4 jobs, and you're also in school. You know, working on getting education, things of that nature. So I know you guys, and that's, you know, then you do the comic on top of that. So, you know, we give you all the kudos for you guys, you know, being here, working hard, and making a difference in America, and being as pro-American as you are, and trying to instill those values and show those values to others. But I do want to bring in Dan. I said he did not get the opportunity to speak with you the last time you gentlemen are here. So thank you very much, Dan, for calling to the show. How are you?
That's another story. Robert, before I do anything, I missed the very beginning of the show, which I will explain why. How do I pronounce your guests' last names properly?
It's Pilates.
Pilates. That's very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Okay, in brief, how am I doing? Let's see. I can't move one arm properly, but that's not stopping me. And work, getting 90 miles to work and back didn't stop me. Work didn't stop me. My kid had a minor medical thing today I had to deal with a little bit. Thank God everything was fine, so I didn't have much to deal with. I came home and laid down for just a minute. And 5 hours later, my wife came home from work, and just a couple minutes ago, and said, "Aren't you supposed to be on the radio?" That's why I missed the beginning. I would
well,
like to say, from what I did hear, I'm learning to pace myself. The Velocity Brothers, you guys are definitely younger than I am, and it's wonderful to have all that energy. I can still outwork a 19-year-old for one day, and then the following day I'll be not quite so up to snuff. So you want to learn to pace yourself. It is a marathon. I was listening to what you're saying, and you're right. The truth in this world, this strange crisis that we find ourselves in, is stranger than fiction. I work at the unemployment office, and we often comment that if we ever scrubbed the details, you know, if we left all the confidential stuff out and just took certain stories that come across our way regularly and wrote it down, people would say, "No, that's not true. That couldn't possibly be true. You had to have made that up. It sounds made up." Today's real news sounds made up. Had you said any of this stuff, not just 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it would have been the most wild speculative fiction, some of it science fiction, a lot of it just real sarcastic you know, just like a spoof. Like 1984 was more realistic than what we're going through right now, the book. Also, I wanted to mention, because I'm kind of just waking up here, I haven't had my aspirin yet, and my grandmother is the most recent immigrant to America in my family, and she learned to speak English with a Polish accent, and I have to say that you guys actually sound a lot easier to understand than my grandma did, coming from Poland. So it's not just that the lies are truth today, and that the news is made of lies. Both major parties are statist. But don't start singing the song, because I'm not too sure I'm fond of the fellow, but it's blurred lines is what it is. It's not just that titles fail in today's turmoil. I mean, liberals are supposed to believe in liberty. Conservatives are supposed to not want to throw out the baby with the bathwater and change things drastically. Capitalists are supposed to be entrepreneurs, not these giant mega corporations which actually stifle creativity and real forward progress. And there's two words that mean nothing anymore, forward and progress. And patriot. Patriot is a term that you see all the time. And Los Hermanos Vilases, you guys are proving what a patriot, what patriots are. Patriots are people who care for this country and who have the enlightened self-interest to say what's best for America is, in general, best for me. I don't know if you guys, you sound awfully young yet, but if one day you may become parents and maybe grandparents even, and what's best for America is what's best for the next generation and the generation after that. And that spirit of sacrifice to make something happen that you're not going to see immediately for yourself, that doesn't necessarily enrich your own pocket. I mean, I don't know about your comic books if you've made money yet, but I've lost money on this Patriot thing, and I think most of the people I know, except for the very, very few who've managed to get jobs or keep jobs in mainstream media, nobody's making money off this. But that's not why we're doing this. And we're fighting people who are making money off this, big money, and they've got big power. And yet somehow, like Ted Cruz said the other day, we're winning. It doesn't seem like it, especially if you look at the mainstream media, but we've changed the debate. We've opened people's eyes. More people are looking at reality in their life and what they're being told, and the dissonance is so great that they can't maintain what is it that they call cognitive dissonance, to be able to hold mutually exclusive concepts that don't make sense, thinking about them together, to hold them in their head. They can't. They can't say, gee, the news media is telling us the truth when they see them telling lies. They can't say, well, the economy is really good when people in their family are long-term unemployed. They can't say, Obamacare is a real plus when they lose their medical insurance. They can't say that having open borders is a good idea, or that a bad economy is a good idea, or any of these, or the unemployment rate is down. They can't say these things are true when in their own lives they see this. And I want to urge people to remember one important thing, because people do tend to think in terms of labels, and they do tend to think in terms of groups, and they're wrong to do so. Individuals is what the Constitution is about. It's about the rights of individuals. I do not like an open border. I do not care where they come from. There's people, folks, they're not from Honduras. They're not from Mexico. They're not from Guatemala. They're from China coming across our borders. James O'Keefe just snuck across dressed like Osama bin Laden. And we've had a lot of coming from in illegally from Pakistan, coming in from God knows where. And that's the point. When you hear Los Hermanos Vilases, I just like saying that even if I don't say it right. When you hear young men with a Spanish accent, do not assume anything other than that English is not their first language. And when you see somebody step up there to a microphone with a teleprompter, wearing a beautiful tailored suit with a great smile on his face, speaking English in deep, malevolent tones, don't assume that's a patriot. And by the way, don't assume that that fella who's in Martha's Vineyard right now was necessarily had English as a first language either. So,
And Dan, real quick, and just to let you know, though, unfortunately, we only have the gentleman for about, because they work so much, only about 15 more minutes, because they can only give us about 40 minutes this evening. And I appreciate them being able to come in and wanted to, get some updates on their comic book and what they've got coming up.
Can we
about
get a link to the
of that nature? Try to get a. Also, it'd be great if they could get an animated series. I think that'd be awesome. But if you have any questions or anything for them, then go ahead.
Just one major one. Can we get a link? If it was mentioned at the top of the show, I must have missed it. But it's not a bad idea to plug, so that other people can tune into their comic book and take a look.
Yes. Our comic book is called Chepo Team. That's a C-H-E-P-O team. And our main link is www.chepoteam.com. But we would really appreciate if you and Robert and our listeners here will follow us and like our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Chepo Team. And our Twitter, which is twitter.com/Chepo Team. And then I really appreciate what you what you had to say. I mean, you really said it all, and I mean, it's an ongoing battle. We actually feel this is the right thing to do. Inform people, be patriotic, defend America, not try to change America, but love America. Yes, the gentleman that's I don't know if I should call him a gentleman, but this guy that's vacationing right now in Martha's Vineyard while Christians are getting killed in the Middle East without saying a word, how can that guy sleep at night? But that same guy, I mean, that's the reason we need to keep this this fight, keep informing people, keep defending America, because be engaged in this process, because it's not being engaged, not talking, is what got this guy elected, and not this guy. I mean, not only this guy, also his regime, all his minions, all his followers, and like you said, like a couple of years ago, everybody that warned about a person like Obama being in office, that used to say that it was gonna be bad for America, that this is not the right guy, you know, you used to get branded, and you still get branded as a conspiracy theorist, as a loony, as a racist. But we cannot be afraid of that, and I do like what you say. And yes, it takes time. So sometimes you lose money, you lose time, but it's a battle that we need to be involved in, because one day we will wake up and we see America not being America anymore.
I'm really pleased to see that cartoon or the comic. You know, neither of those words is really acceptable. Illustrated patriotism, I don't know, illustrated truth, it's really good. The artwork is very engaging. I grew up with comic books. I'm in my 50s, back in the heyday, and my kid really loves the anime and the manga and stuff like that, so I still read this stuff. It's really good because you can catch a whole new audience that you wouldn't necessarily be able to even snag, who may not be aware of anything except what they see on, say, The Daily Show or something like that. Let them become aware, especially like you guys are millennials. You're younger than I am. And it's at this point, if everything was going well, had my generation done its job, we'd be handing over a free and prosperous America to you and the rest of this next generation, instead of handing over a big mess. The good news is, you mentioned that Obama will say his word. It's kind of like in Harry Potter, you know, the he who shall not be named. Of course, we're not really sure what his real name is or what his college transcripts are, or where he was actually born, or any. I mean, I'm not saying he was born anywhere except Hawaii. I am going to mention that there is actually a Hawaii in Kenya. There's an actual town. I don't know where he was born. That's the whole point. A lot of the people who are his followers are just really not, they're not bad people. They're not necessarily stupid people, but they're very unaware people. Once they wake up, once you wake somebody up, they can't go back to sleep. Once they notice that the things that they're being told are just not true, they start looking a little around for truth. And if you're the one to provide that truth, whether it's through a radio show or just somebody that you meet and speak with, somebody you work with, a family member, or, and this is, like I said, it's a great venue, through a comic book, they start reading it. They go, wow, yeah, I get that. That's true. And they want to see more. They're hungry for truth. They're hungry for what is really going on. And the next step is, what can I do about it? And maybe they can do something that is positive. We have James Neighbors with the Overpasses for America idea. We have Kelly Mordecai, who's going to be coming on with the grand jury idea. We've got all these great ideas out there, comic books, social media. And we've got all the traditional means that we've been going through. I've got friends in the media, the alternative media mostly, lots of people in politics, who are doing, which is what we usually interview, people who are doing the traditional route. And they're all saying it's going to take some time. It's going to take a lot of our personal time. It's going to take a lot of our money, a lot of our effort. But I don't think it's going to take time because I don't think we've got the time. Over to you, Robert.
And Dan, yes, it looks like we have, I believe, Harriet on the line. I think she wants to have some comments to our guests tonight. And, gentlemen, welcome our good friend Harriet. And, Harriet, welcome our guests tonight, the writers of the Pro-American Patriotic Team. Harriet, thank you very much for calling the show. How are you?
Hello?
Well, I got 954. That's normally Harriet. Your mic is live?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. I'm sorry. Yeah, usually, I'm sorry. Usually, our good friend Harriet has this area code, so I missed. I went past the call screening and just got this on. Because you must be in. Are you in Florida?
Yes, I am in Florida right now.
Okay, that's okay. That's
the
same area code as Harriet. But go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the air right now.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Okay. Okay, great. You know, I'm just a big fan of the Chepotin series. I'm actually, I was highly influenced by liberal ideas, but I have to tell you something that by watching this guy and following these cartoons ideas and their program has actually been very helpful to open up to other ideas other than just watching, you know, like Jon Stewart and all these liberal media. So I think they're doing a great job by opening up the eyes to other people to see what is the reality of things.
Well, that's one thing that I wanted to say to the listeners, to you and to Dan too, is that our avenue. One of our inspirations here is that when you see Family Guy and The Simpsons, for example, that's a big weapon or a big channel that the liberals used to promote the liberal agenda, the liberal values, and there's not too many alternatives for us young people or everybody that watches this type of entertainment cartoons. So when we write episodes for Chepotin and Juan draws them and we create episodes, we create it in based on common sense on what truly is funny, the American way, and with that we also can put the good message, but it's not even gonna be our message, our biased message, or like a right wing quote unquote message. It's gonna be the correct message, the one that promotes good values, good humor, no cheap shows, no anti-American stuff, just like that. I mean, that's our big inspiration. You want to say something, Juan?
Yeah, and it's not even a conspiratorial message. I mean, it's just common sense message, because I wanted to say this before. We did an episode on, and I found it. We published it on March 6th of last year, and we were talking about how sometimes people like 10 years ago or 15 years ago, if you would tell them the stuff that will happen right now, they will go like, "What are you talking about?" Well, actually, just last year, I mean. On March, we published an episode where there was going to be like a big explosion of illegal people, and you can check it out at chepotin.com on March 6, 2013, that there was going to be a big explosion of illegal people, and there was going to be also like no more funding for the military, and we put the consequences, you know, of having open borders, having an explosion of illegal people, and having no more military.
Having a weak military,
having a weak person in the White House. We put that in the episode, not just long ago, like 1 year ago. And the messages that we had from from, you know, from people who want to consider themselves our enemies sometimes. The message that we have is like, oh, how can you say that? Oh no, these extremists. Oh, what's up with this type of conspiracy theory? Even one said, oh, apparently if there's open borders, there's gonna be a lot of ninjas because the illegals in our show were ninjas. So we put that as science fiction, and look what happened. Not too long ago, it's happening
but
right
it
now.
It was inspired on that liberal mentality of having open borders and a weak military. So when we put this stuff, I mean, it kind of happens that way. But we use the common sense. We make fun of what these liberals say and do. But I mean, it's funny when we put it there. The only part is that when it becomes a reality, it's not really that fun because it has consequences. But we do try to put it out there. I mean, and in that sense, we can educate people through this channel.
And that's how we keep ourselves original, because these ideas, which is just common sense. I mean, the consequences, are going to be bad when you put bad policies, and when you don't respect the country, I mean America or the Constitution, you know the consequences are going to be bad. But you're never going to see that on The Simpsons, on Family Guy, or on Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert. No, you're never going to see that, and that's what makes us original, and that's why we always have good responses, like our caller. I think his name is Alex. Harry? Alex?
No, Harry.
Alex?
Oh, Alex, yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, we lost Alex's call, but Alex, if you'd like to chime in and get back on the show, you're welcome to give us a call at 347-945-7428. And I do see some other folks on the queue as well. So if you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your number dial. But I do see Alex still in the chat, so he's still able to hear everyone. So back to you guys. I don't want anyone to be late, so whoever could stay later, of course, is more than welcome to do so. But it is about 40 minutes after you guys came in, so whoever's got to go, because I know they've got back at work. Another thing. So
yeah, we can stay. How longer?
Well, we can stay a little bit longer.
Yeah, we can stay a little bit longer. Well,
awesome.
We'll let you know. Yeah, we'll let you know when we're ready. Yeah, we're enjoying the time right now.
Okay, great. Well, we appreciate that. Whichever time you guys can stay on, that's great. Well, we do have our constitutional scholar who would like to chime in as well, and you mentioned him earlier, Dan, and that is author Kelly Mordecai. Welcome very much, Kelly, for coming to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, and I really want to welcome these gentlemen who have taken the time to join us and honor us with their presence. I really want to stick up for the Hispanic community. I really like these people. They got hardworking values. They have family values. The American culture is suffering, but I think the legal immigrants here, or even second, third generation, have really contributed to the greatness of America. I've had a couple Hispanic clients, and they are sharp. They are hardworking people, and one of the challenges is slightly the language barrier. And, you know, I was speaking with a Hispanic client today who, sad to say, he was taken advantage of by an American, and I'm furious with, and I know that the person that's trying to take advantage of him due to the language barrier, but I really value their words, and I'm just sticking up for them, and I'm glad that these people have honored us with their presence.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you.
I think you'd be pretty proud.
Go ahead, Dan. Go ahead, guys.
But no, I mean, thank you for that. Hard work, loving America is really have no ethnicity or no color. It's just I think it comes from character. I mean, we unfortunately we do. I mean, as we do have good Hispanics that come here to assimilate, we also have other Hispanics that do not want to assimilate, that they would like to impose a culture and change the concept of being American. They use these ethnic front groups like La Raza that promote this divisive agenda, academia that promotes multiculturalism that is not really good for America. The thing is like we gotta like we were talking before, we have to inform people, we have to put our message out there, because if we stay quiet, the evil people, the people that want to change America are gonna win at the end, and I think that should be enough motivation to really fight them off, and not fight them off physically, but fight them off through being educated, through common sense.
And we gotta, we have to let know, we have to remind all the immigrants that come to this country that what is the reason you're coming to this country.
Why have you come here? You have come here to improve yourself. You didn't come here because...
To repeat what you did over there.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't come here because of the weather. You came here because you know you can make more money, you know there's better opportunity. So embrace it. Don't change it.
Well, that's exactly what I see in this client of mine, that he realized, if I work hard and I motivate people, I can be successful. And he is. And he's just a hardworking guy. He's just like, he loves his son. It's like, why aren't most Americans like this? And I hope Eusebio Precario joins us here. But it's like, there's a lot of people here that are coming, and they work with their common sense, and they realize, the way America was set up, and still we have some momentum, is that if you work hard, you work well with others, you can be successful. And what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. It's common sense. And there are those who wish to pervert the thinking of anybody coming in this country for the sole purpose of what? Getting votes to what? To destroy our country. And it's ironic that the people with such great values come into this country and they get switched into voting for a system, a change in the system that would hurt the ideals that they come here with and their common sense. I don't understand it. And I'm just like, I've got German friends. I got other friends that are like, I got a buddy, Rain's daughter. They get it. They get what America was about, and they work hard, and they're like, and they ask me, what the heck's going on with your country? I was like, well, I'm trying. It's just we got new people with new ideas that it's frustrating, but I see the good. Every culture has their good and bad, and we're all prone to temptations. It's just how do we help the Hispanics, if you will? How do we help even just everyday Americans? How do we help them connect their common sense to realize the way Obama wants to take our government is in the wrong direction? How do we wake these people up to this?
Well, first of all, I would say, stop believing what Univision and Telemundo says to you, because I watch those two news networks. They practically tell Hispanic people that there's a certain way to be Hispanic, and that's the only way. That's the first thing that I would do.
those news outlets, which are the biggest ones for the Hispanic population, will tell you to be a Hispanic first in America, being Hispanic first, America second, like as if America owes you something just for being Hispanic.
Exactly.
I mean, it's this plantation mentality, this entitled mentality. And the problem is that most of the Hispanics that fall in this trap, they don't really mean well. They believe in hard work. They know what's right from wrong. But the problem is that they are not educated in the American ways. They don't know what really means to be free, how this nation was founded. They do lack education on history of the United States,
and that's the type of immigrant that you see that the Democrats want. That is the type of immigrant.
But most of these immigrants, like I'll tell you something. Like I live in Ecuador till I was 16 years old, so I can tell you how it is to live in a third world country, not just go to vacations over there, but to live there. And I sometimes think like wow, I work this hard here in the United States and I accomplish so much. And I know that if I do the same thing in Ecuador, I will not get the same results. And it's because there's less freedom over there. There's this sense that, oh, yes, Ecuador is just, there's democracy over there. There's no freedom over there. There's no freedom of opportunity over there. It's always who you know, which person you know that's in this position, this other position. So if you are a true entrepreneur, go-getter, you want to make it to yourself, you have no opportunity over there in Ecuador. But over here in the United States, you can easily become successful in a matter of 5 years, 10 years, even some people in 2 years they reach a level of success that you can only dream of in other countries. So it's not. Immigrants do know that they have to work hard. There's better opportunity over here. They just don't understand why there's better opportunity to hear. They don't understand yes, go ahead.
Well, the opportunity was set up by the founders of this country in the Constitution and the state constitutions. Basically, here's the bottom line. You are rewarded for your work. If you own the land, you control the land. You're the king of your property. And the government cannot step in on your property without a warrant or probable cause. If they want to take your land, they have to pay you for the land, market price. If you have an idea, you can file a patent. It's yours for 20 years. It is yours, meaning you are rewarded for your work. Over and over, the Constitution was set up and the state Constitution was set up, so you are rewarded for your work. It's that simple. Other countries, it's just not quite that way. And we have a rule of law that, look, if you're going to prosecute me, you better be prosecuting the same guy doing the same thing for the same crime. You need to do it now. Otherwise, we have lost our equal protection of the law. Of course, that's in the Constitution. And so there is so much, be it the state Constitution, the federal Constitution, be it the laws, be it the court rulings, that equal protection and what you work for, you keep. And that is a fundamental principle that has made this country great. And it motivated people to build this country to such a phenomenal level. And there are those who don't realize these simple principles. You get rewarded for what you work for. There's some people who don't understand these principles, and they're trying to take us down.
Go
ahead.
Guys.
Yeah, and there.
And then
we'll
bring Dan back around. Go ahead, guys.
I'm turning it over to these guys because I like listening to them.
Right. Go ahead.
Okay.
Orlando,
thank you.
Yeah. Renato. Go ahead.
Juan. I was gonna say that there is a lot of people who actually have this mentality that that the system is rigged here, that only you can only make it if you know the right people, or, you know, that the system is rigged against the poor, or against minorities, or all that stuff. And in reality, I mean, that's what happens in third world countries, but not here. I mean, who knows? Maybe someday that may happen, but now it's not that way. And that's why I resent many of these politicians or people in the media, you know, like Jon Stewart, all those people. They're always talking about how they're always trying to tell us, especially as minorities, they try to tell us minorities how the system is rigged against us. And that's something that we that's not true. And we try to educate people any way we can. And that's why, I mean, thankfully we have right now this going on with Chepotin, and we try to do it with comedy and all that stuff, because sometimes people, they learn, quote unquote, that the system is rigged through Jon Stewart, to Family Guy, through all that.
The Simpsons.
Well, when in reality that's not true. So we try to do the opposite way, when we try to educate people to our comedy, which is Chepotin. So go ahead.
And Dan, let's go ahead. Oh, go ahead, gentlemen. Then we'll bring it back to you, Dan. Go ahead.
All right. I'm not sure. Mr. Velasquez.
Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, okay. Listen, you're right, but I think there's a step further. The system is getting more and more rigged in this country. It's been this way for a while. When I was a boy, I was able to do a lot of work that I can't do today, that boys can't do today, because they're not bonded and vetted, and they don't have lawyers and accountants and all kinds of, you know, professionals who deal with nothing but regulatory hoops. It's difficult. You're in art, so you have some leeway, at least so far, until they get rid of the First Amendment, which there's already been several proposals by the ruling party in Washington of the Demo Republicans, or whatever, you Republicrats, I don't know what you want to call them. Call it what you want. Statism, you can call it cronyism, you know, get who you know. Progressivism, socialism, communism, it doesn't matter what they call it. And it doesn't matter what their slogans are about how it's fair or how it's good and how it's choice and how you've got a raw deal because of a group you allegedly belong to. It's divide and conquer. It's the oldest story in the world. It's the story of kings. And these people mean business. Now, on the positive side, they don't really have very many followers in any real sense. There are some people who will show up to vote, or who don't have to be, even if they're dead, they'll just get marked off on the electronically. And there are people who will show up at some of the rallies because they're deluded. Some of them are true believers. Some of them, the real activists out there, will do whatever it takes, and they're very devoted and committed. And those people, until and if they see the light, until they decide that they were, like I did years ago, that there's no truth in what's going on in this country, and we need to look at what is true, which is what our founders intended. They didn't invent this stuff. They merely recognized the natural rights that I believe come from God. So I'm not even going to count them among my long-term enemies. I'm going to count them simply as people who might be converted, and if they're doing something very active for the statist cause, then they're my enemy tactically for now, and I need to stop them in their tracks, make them look bad, make them lose their followers, spend their money, waste their time going in circles, and I need to promote the good things that we are fighting for. And there's so many of them, so many different ways to do it. But I want to remind people that this is not necessarily just, everyone always says, oh, but not violence. Now, anyone who's read my stuff or heard me for any length of time knows that I was a very violent guy when I was the age of the Velasquez brothers. I was a little thug. I'm not that way. It's not a good way. It's the way I choose not to be in my life, and I thankfully don't have to use those skills that I've developed years ago. And I think it is the last refuge, as Isaac Asimov said, violence is, of the incompetent. We're competent. There are so many ways that we can fight without violence, but I want everyone to remember what George Washington said. He said, be armed and disciplined, but have a sufficient arms and ammunition to maintain a status of independence from any who might attempt to abuse them, which would include their own government. I am not urging violence. I am not urging, you know, you to go out and have armed insurrection. That would play into the government's hands at this point. And I'm not an enemy of the state, just an enemy of the statists. However, being prepared is a good idea, and we can see this in St. Louis today. There was quite possibly, the facts aren't out clearly yet, but there was quite possibly an extrajudicial killing, possibly a murder by a police officer of a young fellow who happened to be a black kid, and we don't know all of the details. So I'm withholding judgment. I fully expect that I could accept a complete exoneration for the police officer or see him go to jail for up to including first-degree murder, depending on what happened. The fact that he wears a badge doesn't remove him from liability. If he was acting under the color of law properly, then good. And if he wasn't, then he needs to pay, and pay big time. And that's the same for any of us. No one is above the law. But if you look at what happened, in addition to those race baiters who have decided to make this a thing of black versus white, which it isn't, I don't even know the color of the officer, and it wouldn't matter anyway, and they want to make it a matter of black versus white when there's plenty of young men, black, white, and brown, who are being murdered by their own brothers for money, for stupidity, over a girl, over drugs. So it's not that it's the act of a death that's bothering them. And they're going, a lot of these crowds, simply a great excuse to go loot a shoe store or burn down a Taco Bell. Excuse me. If there was a murder, if you're opposed to government tyranny, if you think that this young boy was murdered, and it's a terrible crime if it's true, does that mean that this is a great opportunity to go get those kicks you really like because they're $150 and they've got a picture of a little swoosh on them or something like that and some really nifty features? I don't think so. Now, we'll remind everybody that out in St. Louis, there are some businesses that are not being looted. They're not being burned. They're not being robbed. And none of their employees are being molested in any way whatsoever, because in front of these businesses, on the roofs of these businesses, surrounding these businesses, are the business owners and their employees who are legally, ethically, peacefully, simply carrying weapons. And if you're a mob and you show up and there's five guys all standing there with rifles and they're not pointing them at you and they're not yelling things at you and they're not trying to goad you, they're merely saying this is a line you don't cross, you go elsewhere. So it's not a bad idea to be prepared. And the old dictum of peace through strength is a really good one. If we don't ever want to have have open warfare, whether it's anarchy in the streets or going up against government troops with MRAPs and, attack helicopters and drones and God knows what else, the best way to prevent that is not only to take every peaceful means we possibly can, but to make it absolutely clear to them that it wouldn't work for them, that the planners are not the political people. The political masters make their calculations on what they want to have happen. Then they talk to the actual professionals, and they say, this is what we want to have happen. The professionals will tell them, this is what will happen if we do it. And if they say, yeah, you want to take all their guns? You want to round them up in FEMA camps? You want to put an end to this opposition? No problem. Piece of cake. They'll fold like anything. They'll do it. I guarantee you they'll do it. If not today or tomorrow, then the day after that. But if those professional planners tell them, if you do that, we're going to lose 50% of our men in the first 3 days. Our supply lines won't be secure because they surround us. many of our own people will go over to their side, and your entire establishment will be at jeopardy because you will have committed something that's so illegitimate that the fight won't stop till you're deposed and hanging from a lamppost. I don't think our masters or our would-be masters are stupid enough to want to give that a try. So don't be violent, but armed if you're not. Buy it for cash if you can, or friend somebody that if you've got extras, or get it from your family member. No paper on this. And it's not a bad idea at all when you have a tool to know how to use it. And that includes not just how to point, aim, and squeeze, but it also includes things like small unit tactics and first aid. I mean, these are things that even if nothing bad ever happens with civil insurrection or martial law or anything like that, it's a really good idea. Every person who's listening lives somewhere where there's some kind of natural disaster that has happened in the last 5 to 10 years. Every single place gets floods, fires, tornadoes, earthquakes, hurricanes, something. And you might have to live without power, and you might have some problems, and you do want to protect your family and your own neighborhood. And the best way to do that is to know some things. So get yourself educated.
I'm going to bring the mic back to you guys, to our guest.
I agree with all that. It's interesting that when you said, it got me thinking that some of these looters would not go and rob certain places because they're afraid of the consequences, because they know these are the owners, the employees can defend themselves through their Second Amendment right, through because they are legally carrying guns. So I love that concept that you defend yourself non-violently. By making your enemy know that hey, if you cross this line, this is gonna be the consequence, and you better not do it because it's not gonna be good for you. And one thing that I think that like you mentioned, it's lacking. It's something that's lacking right now as far as the political process. Because for example, I mean the Democrats they just do whatever they feel they need to do to gain more power, but the Republicans are so divided between the true pro American politicians that truly want what's best for America, and then there's the rest, the Republican establishment, the old guard, that sometimes they do this stuff like supporting amnesty. Just to comply with whatever interest group is influencing them, but they either not aware of the consequences through the electoral process. They're not aware of the consequences that they're gonna get voted out of office, like what just happened to Eric Cantor in Virginia. I mean, Oh my God! I was so happy, but didn't he stop and think for a minute that you know supporting amnesty will gonna get kicked out? Or is it that they're so deluded, they're so arrogant that they believe they have this sense of invincibility that they think that could never happen to them? I just don't know what's going on.
The reason they think that it's because it's true. Let's face it, look, wherever you are, whatever voting district you happen to be in, this is for our listeners, look at who's in office right now and ask yourself, is this the same person who was in office 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 6 years ago, 20 years ago? And the answer is most likely yes, because we failed to do due diligence. We got lazy. We bought into everything is fine, there's problems somewhere else, this could never happen. And we let it get to this point. Now, when you talk about the Republicans versus the Democrats, those are like I said, those are false labels. They're two sides of the same coin. When you talk about the leadership, okay, most of the top Democratic so-called leaders, the ones who run the party, are the same people on the Republican side. Democrat, Republican, don't forget what they say. Look at the practical consequences of the things they do, what they vote for before they vote against it, or whichever way it is that John Kerry had it. They vote for larger state powers, less and less individual liberty. They vote for more intrusion. They vote for tyranny. Therefore, that's what they're for. There's no question. I don't find it confusing at all. But when you talk about Republican and Democrat, and for that matter, Libertarian or Green Party or any of the rest of these Constitution Party, when you talk about the people who are out there who say, I'm with that group, well, that can change, okay? That can change in one of two ways. If we look at sports, someone can be a real big fan of a team. And if that team starts acting in really, really bad ways, in other words, not just on the field, but beating women, getting busted for drugs, committing heinous crimes, murders, whatever it is, they have two choices. Some will continue to be blindly loyal, but most will either switch to another team or they'll insist that the team they love be restored. And they'll fight for their team. Now, that's what I'm counting on. I do not make enemies of all of those millions of people who call themselves Democrats or who call themselves Republicans, because they're not. They are not oppressing me or anybody else. The ones who are sitting on the sidelines, the ones who are moderately engaged in support of their parties and who trust their leaders, they are not actively making $1 billion off of me. They are not poisoning the environment. They are not trying to put me in a camp. What they are people who have good hearts but not necessarily clear heads. They need to see things the way they really are, and then they need to make a decision of whether they're going to get more involved or not. And quite frankly, if they do nothing more than stay out of the way of the people who are willing to get involved, that might be sufficient, because you're never going to get 100% of anything, and we don't need 100% of everything. Right now in this country, in terms of active, committed followers who are willing to devote and who are devoting and sacrificing, who are putting everything they've got into the fight, there are more fighting for liberty in more effective ways than there are for the other side, even though the other side's got all those millions. Because if you look at who's in back of the leaders of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, the backers are the same people that President Eisenhower warned us against, which is those multinational corporations. They're not capitalists at all. They don't believe in a level playing field. They don't believe in fair trade. They don't believe in competition. They don't want anybody to give them a hard time. It is who you know in those groups. I deal with it all the time. At unemployment, we'll get people who are workers who make $400 a week, $600 a week. And God forbid they lose their job and they didn't do everything perfectly right. Their companies will fight tooth and nail to make sure that they don't get the unemployment. Luckily, it's not up to them. On the other hand, you get the CEOs, the people who make six figures plus, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 a year, the ones who made the decisions that drove their companies into bankruptcy, the ones who treated everybody really poorly. And they get a golden parachute. They get a huge severance.
Mm-hmm.
They're out on the street with special, privileges, and they don't even bother to really look for work. And when it comes time, when they have their little, and they want their little pittance of $500 a week for unemployment, which is because, greens fees for the golf course have to come from somewhere, I suppose. And I admit this is definitely a prejudice of mine. I don't like these. I'll pay him if the law says so. I'll deny him if the law says so. I go with the law. But it does rankle me, because the companies never fight their unemployment, never provide any evidence that shows that these people deliberately screwed up, which a lot of them have, because they don't care. They're their friends, and who knows, that friend that you helped today might be able to help you get a job you don't deserve tomorrow. Those are the people who are running things. this is not a meritocracy anymore. Aside from the arts, things like comic books and the new media, et cetera, it's next to impossible for you to really, really get somewhere. They used to say the first million was the hardest, but good luck getting anywhere near that, because you need a million up front just to be able to pay for all the regulators' fees and all the hoops you have to jump through. In any case, I could go on and on, and that's really not fair. So, Bob, you're the moderator here.
Yes, I am. And it was, yes, you're timing yourself. You're getting you're starting to time yourself as your time here on Bard's Logic increases. So, yeah, I think you're like, oh, okay, it's starting to come to the fore. So, we'll go ahead and bring it over to our guests, and if there's any comments that they'd like to make on what Dan said, and then we'll bring in Kelly back. And then I do see a couple other folks on the line. If you'd like to chime in, be a part of the show, just push the 1 on your number dial. But if you are listening elsewhere, just give us a call at 347-945-7428, and we'll get you into the show. And so, Juan, if you'd like to make some comments, or Orlando, if you'd like to as well, one of the gentlemen, no, go ahead.
Yeah, this one. I just wanted to say that I believe if a politician like Eric Cantor, for example, is going against his district or against the American people, he wants to push amnesty. You know, a politician like that, he needs to be kicked out of office. But in the primary, the better, of course. So another person can come in and be a person that does not support amnesty. Now, with that said, I mean, I believe that that it's better for the country if we vote in a smarter way. By that, what do I mean? It's like, for example, for me, it's not the same a party that votes for Obamacare and another party that votes no on Obamacare. I mean, if we're gonna go down to that line, to the okay, what's gonna be better for the country and what's gonna be worse for the country, then you gotta vote for the person, even if you don't like, you know, how they vote on budget spending or stuff like that. If you know that the candidate is not going to vote or has proven himself or herself not to vote for stuff that are really going to ruin the country, like Obamacare, like amnesty, then you got to vote for that person. I mean, if there's a libertarian that has a chance of winning, then yeah, let's vote for that person that you know he's gonna have a good record. But if it's gonna be but you have no other person that you can vote for, then you gotta vote smart.
Let me say something about your uncultured talking points right there. I actually disagree with that. I'll give you an example. I cannot support a person like Todd Cotton that just won the primary in Mississippi against Chris McDaniel, when he had to rely in how can I say this, to me, racist attacks through the media by pandering to African American voters to vote against McDaniel. He's a Republican, and yes, he's gonna run. He won the primary, and he's gonna run against a Democrat right now. And yes, of course, the Democrat's probably gonna be 10 times worse than this guy. But I cannot vote for him when he attacked Chris McDaniel, saying that he's a racist, that he doesn't support Obama. All that stuff. He basically called him as, it's like calling me that believe what Chris McDaniel stands for too. So this guy is also calling me a racist. So yes, I mean maybe the Democrat is not as good as him, but I cannot insult myself by voting for this guy if I would live in Mississippi. And sometimes you have these politicians that they do know how to vote, so they're on the record, but in the shadows they actually have different other intentions. For example, my brother likes Mitch McConnell. I don't like Mitch McConnell because Mitch McConnell has a great voting record, but he will always support the Republican establishment candidate, will always trust the Tea Party candidate, will donate money or will raise money to defeat the Tea Party candidate too, like he did for Todd Cochran. So that's one thing that I disagree with my brother there.
You've got a good point, because I think maybe what people might be confusing is strategy with tactics. Strategy is very clear. It's very clear. The one side, no matter what they say, no matter what their rhetoric is, and they are willing to use any tactics to get there, is to increase the state's control over the individual till it reaches a point where the individual has no choices to make. Where, since we're people and we make mistakes, we can't be trusted. Somehow they're better than us and they can be trusted and they'll make all the decisions for us and it'll be to the benefit of not us. That's the other side. Our side's very clear also. We want a little bit of creative anarchy, a little bit. We don't want that lack of government completely. We like law enforcement, we like military. We're not opposed to common sense environmental rules. We're not opposed to making sure, for instance, where I live, there's coal mining. Everyone here is for coal mining. We do like the idea of clean coal mining because we don't like the idea of having to clean up the messes of 100 years ago, which we're still doing because they weren't careful about it. They ripped everything apart just for their own benefit. So, yeah, we're not anti-government. We're anti-too big a government. We like it pared down to what the founders came up with, that grand compromise of regulating where you have to regulate only and leaving the people to make their own decisions on everything else. And that entails a little bit of anarchy. People are going to make mistakes. People are going to have problems. Some will fail. That's part of the process. And quite frankly, if I hadn't failed so much, I would never have succeeded at anything. Because it taught me every single time I didn't get what I wanted or what I thought I was going for, it was because I wasn't doing something right that I needed to learn how to do. So if you don't miss those lessons, you can get somewhere. So what are our tactics? If our strategy is to restore the Constitution, to restore limited, practical government that does what is required and not one thing more, and to unleash the people's creativity and their entrepreneurialism and their just genius at making their own lives and letting other people decide if they want to follow that or not. And that's what made America great to begin with. How do we get there? Well, the idea that we're supposed to support every single candidate who is not the other side completely just because they're not completely on the other side is foolish. I won't, if I had the opportunity, I would not vote for Cochran or McDonnell because Cochran and McDonnell are part of the other side. They are progressive light. They are statist light. They are crypto-fascist. They're hiding their true colors. I wouldn't. On the other hand, I want to see enough people in the Senate to be able to conduct a fair trial when Obama's impeached next year. But would they give a fair trial? Or are they so sold out that they'd be willing to scrap what's left of their meager reputations simply for one last payout and, you know, they did their master's bidding? Hard to say. Big races... I'll finish up real quick. Big races are very difficult for an individual to make a major change in. And, yes, they're important. But more important to me are the smaller races where one vote can make a difference, where one person's involvement in a community can get dozens and hundreds of other people involved and make the changes that are required. That's your local municipality, your township, your borough, your city, your town. Those things, absolutely. And it's issues more than just candidates. It's issues. So whatever the issue of your heart, It could be anti-Common Core. It could be anti-illegal immigration. By the way, Los Hermanos Velázquez, I was born in Argentina, not too far from Ecuador. It could be pro-Second Amendment, or it could be pro-choice, whatever it is, okay? You getting involved with other people who feel the same way as you do and really, really pushing your efforts to do as much as you can in an efficient way and coordinating those efforts wherever there's overlap. Like, I have my own particular major issues, but there's a lot of minor issues to me that I still think are important. And even if I don't have the time to devote myself fully to one of these issues that doesn't, you know, it doesn't resonate quite as strongly with me, any chance I can to share that information with people in other groups that I'm affiliated with, to help them, to promote them, to show up, to push their agenda, to kick a few dollars their way, whatever that is, that's how we win. That's how the progressives won. And that's how we can win. Over to you, Bob.
The way.
Go ahead, guys.
Hello?
And then we'll bring Kelly in.
Yeah, the way I see it is one. The way I see it is that if you think like that, like you know what, this candidate does not have all my values, so I'm not gonna vote for him. So I'm just gonna wait for the next election. I mean, if you think like that. Then you end up with an Obama re-election. I mean, look what happened with and you end up with ISIS doing a massacre to Christians. I mean, that's how you end up with. You end up with a good economy. You still end up with Obamacare. So I mean, listen. You have your opinion. I mean, that's good. My brother has also an opinion also, but my opinion is, I guess my brother, he kind of agrees with me in this, that at the end, I mean, don't wait for the next election to get the person that you want, because you assume that the next election you're going to get the right person. Don't assume that, because then for the next 4 years, the next 2 years, the next 6 years, I mean, depending what it is, what election you're voting on, you're gonna have very bad consequences. I mean, if you don't vote for Mitt Romney because of some things that he said, you don't trust him, you're sticking to your guns. I mean, look what's gonna happen. They just see this what's happening to them. They're being massacred. And I think they were very good allies with the U.S., right, Orlando?
Yeah, they just see this, yeah.
Yeah, they just see this, the Christian, how they're being massacred. I mean, and that's all because of Obama's re-election. So my opinion is, the way I see it is to vote smart, because then you're going to have the consequences can be so awful, that at the end, I mean, just because you wanted to stick to your guns, look what happened. So, I mean, that's my way of seeing it.
And
go ahead.
Go ahead, guys. Okay, well, then I know there was something you wanted to ask or make a comment of, Kelly, so go ahead.
It's not so much a comment as it is a question. I just want to ask our guests what their thoughts are on Obama dropping the borders and allowing anybody and everybody to come into our country. What's just kind of your conclusion, your summary thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's another example of if you stick to your guns, I don't want to vote for the Republican. And that happens, you know, an explosion of illegal immigration. So that's what I'm talking about. So that we gotta go to we gotta become
Obama.
We gotta vote smart.
But on that issue, Obama basically is delivering for their supporters, for his donors.
Mm-hmm.
The interest group that he's serving right now are some of these ethnic front groups that he needs to deliver for. And also, of course, he helps his liberal cause by giving more chances for the Democrats to stay in power.
These are all future Democrats.
Yeah, most of these are going to be future Obama. I was going to say Obama voters, but future Democrat voters.
Hillary
they're going to be Obama future Obamacare supporters. They're going to be future more amnesty supporting. I mean,
he knows what he's doing. It's a good strategy to keep his big government agenda going, and also to get votes to not for him, but for his political ideology and the party that supports his political ideology. But yeah, it's all planned. I mean, statistically, anybody that's informed knows that throughout every election, no matter what, Hispanics have voted has leaned more for the Democrats than for Hispanics. I mean, that from Republicans. So he knows what he's doing. I mean, he might be a bad president, but I don't think he's dumb. He knows what he's doing.
And in the next 2 years, let's say that all the illegals, get amnesty. The next 2 years. So that means that in the next 2 years, it's going to be, I mean, I don't know about you guys. I mean, probably some of you guys want to vote for, I don't know, for Ron Paul, for a libertarian. But in the next 2 years, it's going to be even harder for that because we let a person like Obama get reelected. So in the next 2 years, if the illegals get amnesty, then it's going to be harder then. Then you're gonna get more Democrats. You're gonna get more people in power that wants to take more freedoms out of us. You're gonna get more people that are gonna let Obamacare stay.
More Chapotin haters too.
More Chapotin haters too. You're gonna get that. So that's what I'm saying. Let's vote smart way. I mean, okay, if you don't like a candidate, let's say, for example, a Republican or Democrat, whoever it is, or a Libertarian, all right, let's vote that person out in the primaries. But once the election comes and that politician is, you have seen that he's on the right issues, or at least on the issues that will not destroy the country, then you gotta give the guy a chance. Otherwise, you end up with what is going on right now. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I like that feedback.
Go ahead.
So
you're
finished?
Sorry about that, guys.
Go ahead, guys. But we do have another. Go ahead, guys. I just want to have another caller from 530 who's going to be coming in as well. But first, we want to give you guys a chance to reply, and then I'll bring him in. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, we're finished. I mean, if Kelly or Dan want to say something.
Okay, well, then we'll go ahead and bring him in. I believe, Kelly, this is Eric, who we have on the line. So if you want to do a little intro for him, go ahead, and then we'll bring him in. Do we have you there, Kelly?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay. Well, yeah, I believe it's Eric in, so if you want to do the honors of doing the intro for him before I open up his mic.
Well, yeah, this is Eric. He's also a libertarian, and he's more like totally opposed to statism, be it the Democrats through socialism or the Republicans through corporatism. And, of course, the Democrats are guilty of corporatism, too. But he's written me a paper about why he's, chosen the path he's chosen, and it's quite stunning because statism in any forms, that's kind of his mantra, statism in any form, which is, of course, kind of like dictatorial control, is just bad. So, I'll just turn it over to Eric, I guess.
Okay, without any further ado, then we'll open up his mic. Thank you very much, Eric, for calling to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. We're doing really good. I wasn't listening a whole lot until just a few minutes ago, so I was just listening. I wasn't sure I was going to be pulled in, so I'm a little flat-footed here. Sorry about that. But I think that the gentleman has some interesting things to say, and I appreciate their perspective.
Which gentleman? Juan?
You.
Both of you, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, just our way of seeing.
It's what we see. We might not be 100% on the point on most people, on some of anybody that will hear what we have to say, but it's what we see. Everything that we say or do is mainly through information that we receive via the news or us doing our own research. I mean, and seeing what's going on.
And also from experience of living in a third world country. I mean, we live over there, and we know how the consequences of election, I mean, we know where things are going sometimes when the politicians, what politicians promise. Sometimes, or the way they, even the way they speak. I mean, we can start seeing. Okay, this is going in this third world country direction, and we do not like that.
Like, remember when we had that election? I think it was back in '98 in Ecuador. Against one of the former president Jamil Mawad,
okay.
Against what was the other guy? Noboa.
Lucio Gutierrez.
No, it was against the guy from Washington.
Alarcón.
Noboa. A couple of months later on his presidency, he made the monetary system that we used to use in Ecuador, the Sucre, go to crap. It went from like you could buy a dollar with like, let's say,
1,000.
No, I think it was at the beginning 300. Sucres at the beginning.
Okay.
They jumped to 2,000, then 5,000, ended up in 25,000. Everybody, a lot of people got a lot of people got screwed over there. They lost their life savings. They froze the banking. All the banking accounts were frozen. You have your money there in the banks. You got screwed.
But you have your money on Sucre on the Ecuadorian dollar, on the Ecuadorian monetary system, you were screwed.
And most people, except for the well-connected people and people that knew people in the banking system, everybody else, the regular voter, the citizen over there, got screwed. They got massacred financially.
Yeah.
And that was a consequence from an election of somebody who run on compassion,
mm-hmm.
on promising to be for the poor, for the people. And it's not surprising, but it tends to be this way that is the politician that actually has the worst intentions,
yeah.
but runs as if he has your best intentions, you as the the working man or the average guy, the average voter. So election has a strong consequences, and that's something that I will never forget. Of course, after it went to 25,000 sucres to buy a dollar, then they dollarized the that's how you say they start using the dollar, the American dollar, and a form of dollar currency that was created in Ecuador, like a fake dollar currency too. Like it's a meta. It still is like that over there. But as you can see, like there can be horrible consequences. Of course, most Americans have never lived through something like that. If you tell somebody that could happen here in America, because it has happened in other countries, they will never believe it. They will brand you as crazy, even if you had lived it before, and you have seen who was the cause of it, how that person ran, how that person sold themselves to the people. And I'm telling you, it's no different than Barack Obama.
Yeah,
the same way as that type of politician that we used to remember.
When you hear you didn't build that, somebody else made that happen.
Same thing that Ecuadorian politician would say.
Yeah, that's a third world country speech right there.
Even when I and my brother came here to live before me back in 2003, I had a conversation with Juan, and he said that he told me that. The one thing that's great in America, and this was back in 2003. I was still in high school, and he was in college already. And he tells me, you know what? The great thing about America is that things like that happen would never fool the American people. The people who vote here are more educated. They will see through that. They will never get sold this package
of lies and promises of
utopia. And unfortunately, come 2008, it was sold to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary because it's something that we thought it could have never happened compared to real experience by living in Ecuador and seeing it happen over there through our lifetime. And yes, it happened. And it keeps happening.
Yeah, and if you want to see even more of that, then you keep electing people who want amnesty, who want Obamacare voters. I mean, you want to
keep them. Still have the best interest.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're kind of describing what you could almost call kind of the curse of success. You know, our country has clung to the idea of limited government and that you can't trust people with power, so keep an eye on them. And we were successful in doing that for the first, century and a half, maybe two centuries. But with that success breeds a little bit of sleepiness. People start thinking, well, that can never happen here. But what you're telling us is that's a lie, and I've always believed that it was a lie. If it happened in other places, it can happen here too. But as long as we clung to our ideals, then we could keep it from happening. But we've laid those down. We've been sold a mess of pottage. Our affluence has made us lazy, and we're more concerned with amusing ourselves and the excesses of a wealthy life that we've just allowed this kind of this terrible betrayal of our political views and our political ideals. They've just been thrown away, and nobody hardly seemed to notice it. Some of us were watching it with horror. You know what? It's kind of funny. The whole situation. Several times I've been reminded of the movie Star Wars, which is kind of silly, but I remember in the movie Star Wars, if you remember, when the evil Sith Lord created this false problem so he could be given emergency powers, and they had the Galactic Senate, and he was given this big speech about how all the separatists, and at one point they give him all these powers. They basically gut the Republic, and they're all applauding. And Princess Amidala says, "So that's how democracy dies, with applause."
That was episode one, and Jar Jar Binks destroyed the movie.
they snookered the fool into making the worst motion in their republic history, and everybody fell for it. And there were times during the 2008 inauguration where I just kept remembering that movie. I just kept remembering it and just going, oh, man, what have we done?
A correction. That was not episode one. I'm pretty sure it was episode two. But now you're talking our territory right now, science fiction. We like those movies.
Let me say something about what you just said. One of the...
one of the problems, and it is a problem, is that a lot of young voters, not even that, I believe that from, you know, 18 to 40 years old, you are mainly disengaged. Most of that population is disengaged in the political process. I mean, think about it. Let's face it. If you're a young college student, you mainly think about partying or seeing, you know, like how you talk to this cute girl. I mean, we all know. I mean, we all go through that. Like, we want to just go out, laid back, you know, go on a date with a beautiful girl, all that good stuff.
But it would be nice if they get a book.
But a lot of times, if you cannot bring politics to those scenarios because you know it's not cool. You know, it's not socially acceptable. You're not supposed to talk about politics. And because politics is boring, or, oh, this guy just talks about politics, he's boring, blah, blah, blah. And I've been there in that situation because, honestly, at this point, I really don't care anymore. I mean, if I want to say something about politics, since I believe I'm more educated now than I was 5 years ago in this concept, I would say it, but I know that it's not something that's cool. You know, it's not something that you will go, you know, with your friends out to the club and then start talking about politics. So that's a big barrier because think about it. Most of these people do vote. Oh, they get pandered. You know, the last couple of months of the election, then they ended up voting for the wrong people. They vote based on slogans and commercials and life instead of voting educated or knowing who they're voting for. Mm-hmm. So that's the issue we have now, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, folks, this is all emblematic of something.
Go ahead and come in, Dan.
All right, that you all have to keep in mind, which is, first of all, we're not geared towards technological discussions about intensely detailed things. Most of us aren't, except on our specific focus of interest. If you have an artist, they're willing to talk about art forever. Musicians can talk about music forever. Engineers can talk about engineering forever. Everybody else tunes out after about two sentences. People are geared to listen to stories. They pay attention to stories. And that's things like Star Wars and comic books and songs and popular fiction. This becomes our reality. It's very, very powerful. And there are consequences for what we're doing here. I want to remind everybody of the fact that those who think it can't happen here should read what our founders said in the Federalist Papers when they specifically warned us about what could happen here. And if you update the language and look at the modern situation, it's exactly what they predicted, exactly what they warned us could happen, and they thought most likely would happen in time because people are people. It doesn't matter where they are. America holds a special place only as long as we will willingly and willfully remain a special people that are devoted to a special ideal. If we lose that, we're no different than anywhere else. Lenin, the Soviet revolutionaries, the second most popular, successful revolutionaries in the history of the world. I mean, George Washington would be the first because his lasted the longest so far. But Lenin said that one of the signs of revolution is an intense and increased interest in politics, and people are more interested. People who a couple of years ago, intelligent people, all ages, you couldn't say a word about politics before. They get that glazed look, that offended look, that annoyed look. Now they actually ask questions. They come back at you with opinions, and unfortunately all too many of those opinions are just prepackaged stuff that they've heard from the media, but it's a start. Now,
hold on, Dan, real quick. Two things, Dan, real quick. One is that there's some background noise somewhere on the line, so it sounds like zippers or something. I don't know what it is. But there is some background noise, if we could keep that.
Yeah,
it's not minimum,
Yeah, we've also been hearing that. Not us.
I thought I heard that. But also, just to let folks who are listening to the show, I mean, it's unbelievable. The live portion of the show is actually going to leave us in about 13 minutes. I'm unbelievably fast as it goes here on Bard Logic. But we do have the extended version, which for those who are on the line, will be able to stay on the line for the extended portion of the show, which, although it will not be covered live, it will be part of the archive or the podcast that will be available right after the show, and sometimes even, I believe, right after the live portion of the show, you'll be able to hear the live on the podcast. And also, so if you are listening elsewhere and not on the call, give us a call at 347-945-7428 if you'd like to listen in on the extended period, because if you do not, at the stroke of midnight Eastern time, unfortunately, you will lose the audio to the show. So give us a call at 347-945-7428. And if you'd like to chime in, just press the 1 on your number dial, and we'll get you guys in. So go ahead, Dan. Sorry for interrupting. I just want to be able to get those two things out. Go ahead.
No, actually, business is business. For those who think that it can never happen here, I mentioned my grandmother, who's the most recent immigrant to the family. I was born in Argentina, but my parents are American citizens, born in America. I was down there because I wanted to be near my mother. But my grandmother, who came over from Poland in the late 20s, could see what was happening. She not only wanted to be an American really, really badly and learned English, made sure her kids learned English and embraced American ways, and I think the culture was enhanced here in America by adding, you know, Polish and Jewish cuisine and some of the values, just like every group brings to the melting pot if things are done right. But she knew what was happening, and she saw some danger signs, and every single year that went by as she was raising her family here, the family there became more and more in danger. And she knew when the Nazis started Kristallnacht, when they knocked out all the Jewish windows and locked up a bunch of Jews, took away all their guns. She knew when they rounded up gypsies and they started to round up the communists and they started to round up the mental defectives. She knew that there was trouble coming. When the Anschluss happened, when the idiots in Austria bought drank their version of the Kool-Aid, their whatever it was in German, I can't say it, and they voted to join with Nazi Germany, when Chamberlain gave away Czechoslovakia, hoping to buy peace, when the war started in Poland, and she saw what was happening, was worried for her folks there. She tried to enlist. There's a middle-aged, very small woman, she's like 5 foot tall, with a heavy Polish accent, marching down to the recruitment office, and they laughed at her, and they sent her away. And she kept coming back every week, and they kept laughing, but they laughed less. And after a while, they started to treat her with respect as the news was coming out of Europe and the Far East about how bad things were. They started to call her little mother and you know, say, no, we can't take you, but we appreciate it. And she'd, of course, always bring food, which probably made her kind of popular. And then in one day, it all changed for America because we were attacked in Pearl Harbor all across the Far East. And at the same time, Nazi Germany declared war on us. And, you know, that famous speech by FDR, not my favorite guy, but it was a hell of a speech. And all of a sudden we're in war, and she marches down, and there's a line for that recruiting office that literally stretches for blocks and blocks and blocks, and it never gets any shorter the more people show up. So she didn't want to get in the way of the young men, and she went home. About 3 weeks into the war, when we weren't really doing anything except getting our asses handed to us, when England was fighting alone and the entire continent of Europe had basically fallen, when Poland had been split up between Stalin and Hitler, where they just said, you take these ones, we'll kill these guys. You take those guys, you can kill them. They came to visit her in an unmarked Army Ford sedan, and they said, listen, you wanted to enlist. And she says, you'll take me now? No, no, come with us, we have a job. They were just starting up the shipyards in Marcus Hook, Pennsylvania, which is right near Chester on the Delaware River, for the war production, because the industrialists had been pretty much sitting on their hands during the Depression. They had nothing to do, but they're industrialists. So Henry Kaiser had this idea of building modular ships. They were called Liberty ships. And everyone knew that you can't just start and expect something tomorrow. It takes a couple of years to get things going. And they were already envisioning the invasion of Europe and what it would take. So they trained her to be a welder on the shipyards there. And she soon became a foreman of the welders, bossing around guys who were too old or too sick to be drafted or to enlist in the war effort. And she was a hell of a boss. She's a hell of a grandmother. And she would urge them, work faster. You know, she said, our boys are depending on you. I'm not going to do the Polish accent. And they're killing our people over there. And when the war was over, they found out just how many people were killed. We had like 300 or 400 extended relatives, cousins, aunts, uncles, my great-grandparents, her parents. Two lived through the war. Two. The rest were murdered. It happened. Well, she didn't talk about that much. Nobody talked about that much. It was a constant presence in my life when I was growing up in the 60s. And it all kind of hit home and gave me a real wake-up call that never went away from me. In 1968, a year after the 67 war, when all these countries surrounding Israel attacked them and got their asses handed to them, and Israel basically took the Sinai, took the West Bank, took the Golan Heights, could have gone further, stopped themselves, gave most of it back in the meantime, trying to buy peace. But one of the two in my family that survived in Europe, she had been 5 years old in the death camp. A little blonde, strawberry blonde, blue-eyed girl. And the Nazis were pretty efficient, but they couldn't get to everybody. And with the Red Army closing in from the east and Patton's Third Army closing in from the west, they read the handwriting on the wall and ditched their uniforms and lit out of there, leaving a few. And my cousin Genya was one of those few who didn't get killed. And after the displaced person camps in Europe and after the trying to get in and finally getting into Israel, she raised a family and she fought and, very nice person. She's passed on since then. She was my mom's age. And I remember in 68, she came to visit us. So I'm sitting in my grandmother's house in Wilmington, Delaware. The immigrant family, I mean, they worked so hard for everything. They had nothing to start with at all. And I'm sitting on this couch. I can still remember it with the thick plastic slip covers they used to have that, protected the furniture and were just impossible to be comfortable on. But this was an investment. And I'm sitting there, and my cousin comes in. My grandmother goes off into the kitchen to make some food or something. And I noticed on my cousin's arm the tattooed numbers. Now, you're all used to seeing tattoos these days. These were crude, ugly numbers. No art to it at all. And I was a smart young boy, and I knew things, I thought. And I said, I know what those are. I touched her on the arm, and I said, I know what those are. I know what those are, and you don't have to worry. You're in America. You're safe. It can never happen here. And she was silent. And then after a moment, it seemed like I was sitting there all by myself, like there was nobody there but me. And I didn't understand it. I thought, what's wrong with her? And she got a kind of a stricken look on her face, and she just left the room. And I was very confused, smart boy that I was. After a few more minutes, my grandmother comes into the room alone. And you got to understand, my grandmother was probably much like your grandmother. It doesn't matter what part of the world your grandmother's from. Your grandmother thinks and is happy to share with everybody she meets that you are the smartest, handsomest, prettiest, best, just the most amazing grandchild that ever existed in the history of the world, and she's so proud of you. Here, eat something. That's your grandmother. if you're lucky, to have grandmothers. That's what they do. And mine was no different in that respect. So I was completely unprepared when she grabbed me and picked me up. Now, I'm a big kid, and she's a small woman, so she's got me in one of those Darth Vader moves, you know, where you're picked up off the floor. And our eyes are looking into each other from inches away, face to face, and she's crying, and I'm crying. And in her thick Polish accent, she's saying, do you think we knew? Do you think we were uncultured, that we're uncivilized, that we were animals? Do you think we had any idea that that would happen? And she began to tell me all the things that they had in Poland when she was a girl. They had theater and universities, streetcars, electricity. They had radio. They had elected representatives. They had, you know, various different kinds of religious institutions. They had everything you could imagine that was good existed in a civilized country with a history of civilization. And yet it happened there. And she made me promise that I would do whatever I could to make sure it never happened here. For a long, long time, I was convinced it wouldn't happen here. But I made it a point to study statism. And as Kelly's promo of Eric says about statism, it is very bad. Doesn't matter what the reason for statism is. Every single time, every single place in the world, whether it's straightforward kings, whether it's a kleptocracy like the Marcoses were on their way to, whether it's called socialism or called fascism, whether it's right wing Pinochet or religious like under the Ayatollahs in Iran, no matter, even if it's just crazy guys like Idi Amin, doesn't matter what they call themselves. When the government gets that much power, when people in power love their power that much and become paranoid, they will go after anyone they think is a threat, then anyone they think who might be a threat, then anyone who it's useful to go after to convince others there's a threat, and then their own friends, just to make sure that nobody ever becomes a threat. And it always ends up the same way. It ends up with mass murder. So I looked at what happened with each of these countries, the steps that they took, and I looked at America and the steps that we're taking, and I thought to myself, I can't see a difference. And it alarmed me enough to get out of my comfort zone. I am not interested, for the most part, in publicity or in speaking publicly or in writing for other people. I'm a private guy, and I can prove that because most of my life I stayed away from publicity. I had an early career with, radio and TV and stuff, writing, and I got away from that. I didn't like that. I like to sit in a nice, quiet place with my family and my pets and my friends and my music and not be bothered. We all want something along those lines. But this is what I can do, and this is what I'm willing to do because I don't have any choice unless I'm willing to sacrifice that next generation. The Velocities, they're in the same generation as someday, maybe soon, there's going to be another generation after that. Do I want to see this happen to them? I mean, I'm an old fart. Whatever happens to me happens. I've lived a very full life, and I've got the scars to prove it. However long I've got is up to God. I'm not worried about that. But how can we do this to our children? And how when the facts are the facts, can anyone sit on their you-know-what and do nothing once they realize those facts? So our job is to make sure that people realize the truth and motivate them and give them a little direction and then let them lead.
Well, you got a number of good points there.
That's my personal story.
Yeah. Well, you got a number of good points there.
Please.
And, you know, we've talked about statism, which, you know, it doesn't matter whether the boot of oppression is left or right, it's still a boot on your neck. And Eric and Dan have talked about, oh, let's see here, we talked about special ed, which I have my certificate because I went to the classes. We talked about engineers, what do engineers use for birth control, their personalities. We talked about the English language, which, by the way, I sneak in a joke wherever possible. we talked about the English language.
Good.
Some
well,
people
now it's
learn
Bard's Logic After Dark, so.
Okay. You know, actually, I had a Hispanic friend. Her name was Angelia. And she, I told her that joke once we were going somewhere. What?
I said, Jolie?
Yeah.
Never mind. Go ahead.
Well, okay. Angelia. Anyway, so I'm like, hey, you know what engineers use the birth control? She says, conversation.
Wow. I guess she was throwing me a hint there, Kelly.
Oh, we just totally both laughed. But anyway, I was so checking her out, you know. Anyway, so then we talked about the English language. And, you know, I really like how Hispanic folk can just get it out there real quick and that's it. But there are some certain people, and I won't mention Dan Gray's name, but they have learned the English language too well. Too well. All right, so I'm just kind of like commenting on all our comments and trying to be my usual comedian. But anyway, so I guess I want to ask our guests, you know, what they have learned of American history and what they see that makes this country so great.
Bernardo or Orlando or Bubble, but answer that.
I mean,
it looks like we just lost Eric, and unfortunately he's not going to be able to call in. I don't know what happened there. I was going to bring him in next after our guests, but unfortunately looks like he dropped the call. But I want to thank you very much, Eric, for coming on to the show. Wish we could have had you on longer, but unfortunately when folks the line after the extended version, they we'll not be able to call back in, so if you could let him know about that, Kelly, I'd really appreciate it. And hopefully he'll be able to call on our show for next week when we'll have the founder of the Oath Keepers on, and that'll be next week. That'll be Steve Rhodes. So we'll be having him on next week. But go ahead, Kelly.
This one. No, I just wanted to say, when my brothers write, about stories for Chapotin, and when they collaborate, the stuff that is in Chapotin, we base it on history. Because we like a lot about the American history. Me particularly, I kind of like what the history of the United States from the last 60, 70 years, you know, from World War II to the Cold War, all that stuff. That interests me a lot. And when you see ideas, I mean, it's like that saying that if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. So that's very important to have that in your mind. And with that, I mean you can have a lot of common sense ideas to base on what you learn from history. But I mean always try to learn what happened in World War II, what happened in the Holocaust. I mean, what preceded that? Why did that happen? Stuff like that. Like, for example, right now, what's happening right now in Iraq, I mean, it will be looked on later on in the future. The history books are they're going to say that was the inaction in Iraq, I mean, that led to this type of a massacre to the Christians. So always pay attention to history. I mean I like knowing my history, but at the same time, I mean, I know that I have to learn it so it doesn't get repeated and get common sense conclusions out of that. But
what happened during World War II to Jews happened during World War II to many other groups as well. Simply because somebody had an identity that was defined by someone else as you're part of a group. And it happened during World War I or just after Turkey massacred a couple of million Armenians just because they were Armenians. And it's happened since then in many countries. It happened in Cambodia. It happened in Rwanda. And what's going on in the Middle East right now is no less a Holocaust. It's no less a mass genocide. They're murdering men, women, and little children, folks, for no other reason than they are Christians. No other reason.
I have seen the news. I have seen the news that I mean, they have interviewed some Iraqi people from some Iraqis from over there, and they say that what is happening right now is reminiscent to the Holocaust. I mean,
it's the same thing.
It's just terrible. So anyways, Robert, we're gonna say bye right now, but we appreciate very much for having us on your show.
No, thank you. Thank you also to Robert, Dan, Kelly for a great time. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you. It's great meeting you.
No, thank you, guys. And I appreciate all the knowledge that you gave us, and it's pretty cool. And hopefully, we can be here in another time.
And now when I have...
Thanks, guys, for coming on.
Yeah, when I have younger folks that I'm trying to convert into the cause of liberty who aren't necessarily sophisticated with the politics, I can start with Chepo Team.
Exactly. We really appreciate you guys coming on, and we'd like to get some updates on the different things that you'll be doing, different ideas, different scenes you'll be doing. And also you mentioned earlier on in the show, there's folks who, you know, telling you to go ahead and try to get the newspapers or, you know, T-shirts or maybe even an animated show at some point. So if any of those things happen, please keep us posted here so we can get you on the show to talk about it. We really think what you're doing is a great thing out there. And we appreciate you coming on. And, of course, you're welcome to come in and discuss, be a part of our roundtable discussion on any shows regardless.
Don't forget us when you get famous.
Don't forget about us little people when you guys get famous.
We appreciate it. No, don't worry about it. We hope that happens. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Well, everyone, you guys have a good night, and we'll talk with you guys again.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much, Robert, and everybody else.
You too. Take care, and thanks for spending as much time as you guys did on the show. And so, so next week we will have the founder of Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, on the show. So we're looking forward to that. If you heard some typing in the background, that was just me sending a message to Mr. Rhodes about some particulars about next week. So we do have a few other folks who are on the line. So if you would like to chime in about anything tonight, just push the 1 on your number dial, and we'll get in. I know one thing I'd like to discuss, we got some time tonight, or two things, and with our topic, I'd like to discuss a video that I watched that was given to me by Harriet about the war, worldview war on America's borders. So I'd like to talk about that. I don't know if anyone else has seen it. I believe I do have a post on the Bard's Logic Political Talk page on Facebook, and so if anyone is new to the show and you haven't visited the page there on Facebook, check it out, give it a like, and see some of the different episodes and links. We also have a Bard's Logic Political Talk group, a little small group of us. If you'd like to join that, just send an invite, and I'll get you in. And so the second thing I want to talk about is something disturbing. I'm sure we're all heard about in the news, and we'll start with you, Dan, and then Kelly. But, of course, if any of the folks who are on the line want to get in, we'll get them in quickly, because I do see we only have about 40 minutes left of our discussion time. So I'm going to try to really try to narrow down where we can get our final comments in and get them all in and get the closing out of the show done without feeling as rushed as we had in the past. So we'll do that. But something that I've heard disturbing in the news, I'm sure you have, is what's going on there with ISIS and what's going on in Iraq. And well, I've been hearing stories and reading about stories how they're actually, and this is even disgusting and hurtful to come out of my mouth, is that they're actually beheading children, even going as so far
as to put them up on posts or sticks. Dan, have you been reading any articles or hearing anything about that? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, and there have been very, very, very few good news reports on the mainstream news, but it is starting to break through. In some of the alternative sources, as always, you get sensationalist stuff that people think might be true, or they get a report and they report it as true, which is something that you got to be really careful about. If you're talking opinion, go ahead. If you're talking fact, back it up. So one thing I really like is those news agglomeration sources like Matt Drudge. Here in Pennsylvania, we've got the Keystone Report that not only choose which headlines, because they write very few stories themselves, but have links to all of these major sources, including the left and the right and the center and the odd and the different, but they vet any story that goes on there. Anytime that a credible news organization prints something that isn't true, they always have to do a retraction. You'll note that Matt Drudge, who is, you know, the left says he's a terrible guy, and Geraldo says he's trying to start a civil war. Matt Drudge does print retractions. He does print different versions of stories. He does print stories that show that what he had originally printed may not be true, but very, very, very few. He doesn't have to, because he's taking the time, him and his staff, to make absolutely certain that when they put something up, it passes journalistic muster. The stuff that's coming out of Iraq, I shouldn't even say Iraq because it's larger than Iraq. It's part of Syria, part of Jordan, part of Iraq, maybe parts of the north of what might be Kurdistan, this Islamic caliphate, ISIS or ISIL or whatever you want to call it, is horrendous. And I've seen credible news reports that include unedited video with corroboration. It's not enough to have a video. Somebody who was there and said, I was there, I took the video, I saw it, this is what happened, here's the names of these people. First, we saw them rounding up troops and executing them, which is barbaric. A lot of these troops are just kids that were thrown into a uniform. Then we saw them murdering men, and mostly men, who were Christians. Now we're seeing them murdering children en masse, and the scenes are, it's kind of a combination between what you might expect from the Nazis and from Idi Amin. I mean, very brutal and efficient, at the same time, incredibly savage and bloody, okay? They're not clean about it at all, which is a good thing because it shocks the hell out of people, those who are paying attention. What they're doing, if we could look back in time and we could see what Genghis Khan did, it's very similar with one important difference. The biggest mass murderer in history, arguably, in terms of percentage of world population, was Genghis Khan and his sons and grandsons, who swept all the way from China to Hungary, almost the entire known world, with the exception of Africa and the Americas. That was it. They pretty much killed everything that came in their path if those people refused to submit and pay taxes. If your town opened their gates and said, sure, you rule us, we'll pay taxes, they really didn't care what you did. Like the Romans really didn't get, they said, look, as long as we can put up a temple to our gods and you pay us heavy taxes, we don't really care who you call a king. We don't really care what you choose to worship. Just behave yourselves. Don't cause us any troubles and pay us and we're good. They were like enlightened mobsters, okay? Not to say that they were anything less than mobsters, and they had plenty of injustices. But you didn't get mass murderers unless somebody refused to resist. Now, in the Roman world, very, very few chose to resist. Israel was a notable exception. Carthage was a notable exception. Carthage was destroyed, and the reason Libya, which used to be basically grain fields, is desert, is because the Romans sowed salt. They put salt into the soil when salt was expensive. just so that nothing would ever grow there again. That's how mad they were that anyone would stand up to them. With Judaism, the diaspora, they destroyed the temple, and they kicked almost every Jew who couldn't hide out of Israel, spread them all over the world. But there have been continuing Jewish presence there the whole time. Just most of them were kicked out. Okay. With the Khan, the Khanate, which is of the hordes of barbarians under Genghis Khan, these guys, if you had any resistance at all, if you didn't open your gate, if you refused to pay, if you tried to negotiate, they killed every single person in town. There were culture, including Muslim cultures and the Far East, that used to be like Samarkand, great centers of learning and trade and everything else, that turned into smoldering mud ruin with nobody living there. And 1,500 years later, there's nobody living there, or hardly anyone. That's what ISIS is doing right now in the Middle East. The stories coming out of there, I can't even say these things without wanting to weep or vomit. It's just beyond savage. And they're doing it for a point. They're doing it because nothing will intimidate more than complete savagery. This worked for the Soviets. It worked for Mao Zedong. It worked for the Nazis. It's working right now in places like Iraq, where they're just murdering a whole bunch of homosexuals just because they happen to be homosexuals. No other reason, just because. We don't like that. We kill them. It's happening in North Korea, where if you're not part of the small group of elites or their military supporters, the life is nasty, brutish, and short. And key on the nasty. I mean, they have death camps there. They have death camps for political prisoners with millions of people in them. The world has known and done nothing. And the world will do nothing and would have done nothing against Nazi Germany had they kept it within Germany's own borders. But the problem with these groups is they tend to want more. They want more and more until they butt up against somebody else who's just like them. So this caliphate is going to have to fight. It's going to have to fight, first of all, against the Shia Muslims of Iran, and that's coming. But if they make peace with them and decide that it's the same prophet, then we're in real trouble, because Iran is technologically a pretty advanced country. They have a lot of educated scientists, and they're very sophisticated. They want world domination. And it's not about Islam. It's not about what people believe at all. That's just the method that they use. What it's about is total subjugation so that a very few can have total power. They have infiltrated Europe to the point where Europe could fall so easily. And they're doing it in this country. In this country, there are ISIS supporters. There's in one of the lead stories on Drudge right now, a British rapper, some popular guy, is a jihadist for ISIS. And there's a picture of him. This is in the Daily Mail, posing with a severed head. This is a guy who kids look up to. And he is on a town near the Syrian-Turkish border, just posing with a severed head. And there's some people out there, unfortunately, who are going to find that dark recess of their soul where violence and horror lies, and it's going to resonate with them. And instead of choosing life, they're going to choose death. The only good news on that is it makes them easier to identify as enemies. And they're so selfish that whereas we would be willing to give up our lives for our comrades and for our children, they won't. They're like all the rest of the bullies. They'll fight real hard, but if it looks like they're going to lose, they're wimps. They give up. They will not be interested in giving except for a few fanatics among them. The trick, as Patton said, is not in giving our lives for what we believe in, for our country. It's in getting the other poor dumb bastard, and I'm quoting Patton here, to give up their life for their country. we are going to end up in a world conflagration with radical Islam. The question is whether we will survive, and the only way we can survive is if we can restore freedom here at home. And that sounds paradoxical because freedom is, as I said, a little bit anarchistic. It's a little bit disordered, maybe a little less than efficient. But it's also that thing that creates the prosperity we need to be able to fund this, and it's also that thing that creates the creativity that we're going to need to be able to overcome this. And mostly, liberty is what creates the climate that's worth fighting for. Those young men who went across the English Channel on D-Day, knowing that most of them were going to get wiped out, and most of them did in the first half day, just wiped out, they didn't do it because they were afraid of being shot by their superiors. And they didn't do it because they had some idealistic adulation for Eisenhower or Roosevelt, you know, or they, oh my God, we worship these guys. They did it because they believed, because they knew what the life was about in liberty, and they wanted, they realized the danger, and they wanted to protect their wives, their daughters, their moms, their dads, their sisters. They wanted to protect those people at home from the tyranny that they saw happening just a few miles from where they were stationed. They knew it was real. They knew it was coming. They knew what they had to do. We're not at that point yet, but we're going to get there fairly soon. I'm optimistic yet, folks. This is nothing that hasn't been foreseen, and I'm not talking biblical stuff here. I'm not holy enough to know that sort of thing in any detail. But it's been foreseen by people who have been doing analysis of what happens when we have a precondition. How does it develop? It's been developing. And even though we can't avoid it, I'm sorry, folks, we can't avoid it. Putting your head in the sand is not going to help. You can't avoid the bad thing. What you can do is prepare for it and do your damnedest. And will you fall? Many will fall. Many will fail for a purpose. Your question is, now you have to ask this of yourself. Are you that selfish that you would give up everything for everybody else, including yourself, every bit of freedom, for a chance that you might just be overlooked by your conqueror, by your oppressor? Or are you willing to band together with those people who are having common with you the will towards liberty and decide that it's something that's worth fighting for, it's worth sacrificing for? Are you going to be so dead set on your point of view of liberty that you can't allow anyone else's point of view of liberty? I've come to the conclusion in this country, and this does bring it to another topic a little bit, of freedom to carry and freedom to marry. Just to say that you want the traditional views, you want to be able to protect yourself, you want your Second Amendment, great, let's get off all the social stuff. And by the way, that does not include abortion, because abortion is not a social issue. Marrying, no matter who you marry, for whatever reason you marry, if you're over 18, doesn't kill people. Abortion kills people who can't protect themselves. That's not a social issue. You don't have to come from a moral issue, which I do. You don't have to come to it from a religious issue, which I do. But you can come to it from a constitutional issue, from a equal protection under law, from a due process issue, which I do and which cannot be denied. And I'm guilty of that sin that Kelly always mentions. So can we get him in here?
Actually, his call dropped too. It sounds like there's been some technical difficulties floating around all over the place tonight. I know when we first started, I had a difficult time hearing people. But he had to go on to another call, and so he was going to come back, but unfortunately it must have dropped. And as we know, here in the extended period, once the call drops, unfortunately, it does not. Now, to the said, another thing I wanted to talk about was the video that Harriet sent me, and, you know, it's called The Worldview War on America's Borders, and he was talking about asymmetrical warfare and how this quote-unquote illegal immigrant crisis, as a part of it,
and where, you know, they're using to just inundate our infrastructure with these illegal aliens, and like, especially using the children and getting people to focus on the children, of course, so that kind of smoke screen, kind of diversion towards, you know, why everyone's paying attention to all these so-called children coming up from Central America. And while everyone's focused on that, they're not really focusing on the border and how a lot of the resources are being taken away from, you know, the border. So, you know, you can have the people who really want to infiltrate the country and, you know, mess around with our infrastructure, so, you know, with water, you know, and electric, things of that nature.
How about we focus on our own children?
Yeah.
I'm serious. You know, I am not a heartless person by any means, and I don't think you could find anybody in this world. There's people say I'm a jerk. I have been not as well behaved as I am today in the past, but I've always had a heart, and I do care about other people's kids. I am not going to save somebody else's kid who's drowning by using my kid as a lifeline. I'm not going to take my kid and tie a rope around her ankle and throw her out in the water so that some other kid can grab it. If I want to risk my own life, that's one thing. If I want to make an extraordinary attempt to make a human chain of willing adults, or to grab you know, a tree branch or something like that to go out on thin ice, or to go out in dangerous water, I think I've proven in my life that I'm willing to do those things. And there's many. Yeah, this doesn't make me special. You hear about it all the time. Lots and lots of decent people who just step up in a crisis and do the right thing, even though they didn't know they had it in them necessarily. But to ask somebody to hurt their own children for someone else's child, that is just a sick, sick choice. That's not a choice at all. That's saying, what, you mean I don't care if I'm not willing to hurt my own kid?
Right, and that's what our government is asking us to do.
They're not asking anything. They're telling us.
Well, yeah, very good point.
Lying to us to boot. I don't know.
Very good point.
We do face a lot of really difficult things, and one of the biggest challenges right now is in coping with emotionally and intellectually with the fact that these statists have just about gotten their hands on every lever of power, and they're pulling all the levers they can. Now, keep in mind, first of all, that they don't have as much power as they would have you think, because if they did, you'd be in a FEMA camp right now. Okay? I would be, and so would a lot of other people be. So they don't have as much power as they think, as they would have us think. The other thing is, do keep looking at all this stuff. Use it. How do you think people coped with the news during World War II, during the Civil War, when they had the telegraph, where the news of these horrible, horrible, you know, atrocities and massacres on the Western front of the war, where the news of these horrible massacres in organized slaughter like Antietam, the word came back in practically live time, and there was no censorship going on. Lincoln was sitting in the telegraph office at the Naval Observatory getting the information live as it came over the wire, and so were people in New York City and everywhere else. And this stuff was going out in the newspapers. And the lists of the dead were being published. People knew. How did they cope? The same way we've got to cope. You deal with it. You focus your attention on that far goal, and you make sure that you do something about it. During World War II, when things were that terrible, my grandmother, how did she keep from going crazy or you know, depressed to the point of immobility? She had her work. Granted, she was not on the front lines with a gun in her hand, which she really wanted to do, but she had a welding torch, and she had a crew of men, and she had a job to do that made a difference. It wasn't just those men who went ashore on D-Day. Think about all the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands of men, and mostly women, who were in the factories here at home working their asses off to make clothing, to make, you know, things out of canvas, to build jeeps, to make ammunition. they worked, and they did their best, and that's all anyone can do. And they trusted in God. That's one thing that gets me through. A lot of people don't feel the same way, and I don't urge them to feel any particular way about spirituality. I don't have all the answers. I am not sure I have the answers for myself most of the time. I try. But that belief in something greater, that belief in something good, is something that's worth fighting for, and it gives you peace. That's one thing I do feel also is a major, major positive to our side versus where we started off with, which is these evil people like ISIS, these evil people who are trying to open our borders wide and destroy America, the last bastion of liberty in the world, the first and last. When you fight for evil, you're pretty much alone. You can't have an ally. There's nobody who's going to love you because you don't love anybody. There's no love involved. There's no decency involved. There's no higher standard. There's just savagery and making it worse, destroying things, not building. Nobody wants to build. In the Soviet Union, so few people believed in that system, they didn't build anything. In communist China, until they opened it up to a little controlled capitalism where somebody might have some chance of digging themselves out of poverty, people didn't believe in it. They didn't do anything. It looked real great, but the concrete was bad. The rebars weren't set right. The things collapsed. It was pretty ugly. Nobody used it. And they had nothing but lines of people waiting to buy bread or whatever might be on sale. Whatever it was, they'd buy it just so they could get something and trade it for something else. In a prosperous economy that's built on liberty, there's lines and lines of stuff waiting for people. And if you think the choices are overwhelming and that you can't cope, go to the Walmart, go to the supermarket, go to the store, the hardware store, whatever it is, stationery store, and just pick an item, breakfast cereal, ballpoint pens, shoes. Just pick an item and go look at the choices you have. Now, is this daunting to you? No. First of all, what kind of shoe do you need? That limits it. Now, you're not looking at the whole store if you're at a shoe store, even a big one. You're looking at one aisle. All right? You need boots. What specific features do you need? Now you're looking at 20 shoes. And what size do you need? Now you're looking at a few less. Now what style do you need? You've narrowed it down to a choice. And it may be really, it might be hard to choose. But really, are you making a bad choice if you choose any of them? No. Those are all good choices for you. That's what you need to get to, is narrow down your focus to what you can do, what works, what's going to help now. That's your tactic. And widen your focus to look far into the future. We're talking, some of us won't make it. Some of us will be like Moses, standing on the promontory, looking at the promised land, knowing he can never enter. Some of us will fall before it happens. I don't think it's going to take a whole generation, but I think we can rebuild liberty in this country, but quick. And we can win the worldwide battle for liberty and for decency. And I don't think it's going to take 100 years. I don't think it's going to take 20 years. I think things are going to happen faster and faster, and it'll seem like it's out of our control. And on an individual level, it is. But I trust that if we do what's right because we're motivated by the right, then we can not only succeed, but we can succeed in a way that will put us head and shoulders over anything that's ever been before. We can be better. We can be closer to what God intends, to what our founders promised us, than ever before. It can be done. And if
one of the things you want
wrong,
to bring up, you know, with that video and get your what's up?
No, go ahead. It's just us.
One thing I want to get.
I'm trying to fill some
your
time
opinion
here.
On, it's just me and you, and then we got about 10 minutes or so before. Closing out already, so I wanted to bring more about this video that Harriet sent me and get your thoughts on it. Is that one of the things the guy was speculating on there, and if you like, I'd send you the video as well, or Harriet can,
where one of the things he was contending is that what they're doing is they're actually bringing in all these illegal immigrants from Latin America, Mexico, things of that nature, because what the progressives are literally trying to do is to bring in folks who are going to, they're literally talking revolution, and these folks are going to be, you know, the new revolutionaries here in America to bring on progressivism, if not to the ballot box, then through a battle. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, Harriet did send me the link, and I have absolutely zero time to watch anything anymore, so I put it on my list, short list of things to try and get to this week. He's got a point. The only problem is organized revolution requires discipline, and while gang members have discipline, they have discipline within their cartels for making money. And it's, again, they're fighting a negative fight for negative things. You'd send me a cartel member. Send me 10 of them. Send me 100 of them. And I'll remind you of what happened in Chiapas State in Mexico just last year, where the people realized, hey, government's not protecting us. The government's in bed with these narco-terrorists. There's too much money involved. We want our town back. And so they legally armed themselves, because in Mexico it's basically illegal for you to own anything more than a pea shooter, which you have to jump through hoops for. So since there is no law, they just simply pulled their money and they bought real weapons, and they proceeded to take back their town. And they murdered, killed, had battles with an awful lot of cartel members. These are those tattoo-faced, really badass, devil-worshipping, MS-13, you know, Zeta cartel types, these really, you know, trained by the CIA, just really murderers. And they took them back, because I'll tell you what, you go in there thinking, I could loot, I could rape if I win. You're motivated. But if things go wrong, you'll run away, because what the heck are you losing? You can loot or rape tomorrow if you live. But if you're saying, this is my home, this is my family, this is my children, I can't go anywhere, I'm not leaving, I don't care who they are or what they come at me with, I'm going to stop them. Who's more motivated? You know, back in the 90s, they did a really interesting survey, which I've seen has been replicated, so I'm not a big fan of surveys. But they did ask convicted violent felons what were they concerned of with? Now, they weren't that concerned with alarm systems, because those were technological, and it was just a question of a learning curve and a little bit of investment. They could take most of those out. And they weren't particularly concerned with police officers, because even in today's day, where the police are getting a little out of hand in a lot of places, maybe a lot out of hand in some places, they weren't too concerned, because as long as they stopped resisting immediately, they were pretty much guaranteed that they would be taken in and they'd be in the system. And they knew how to work the system, and it wasn't all that bad to go back to jail for a while, because, hey, it's like old home week plus college education. You can learn some new skills. Hey, I never knew how to pick that kind of lock. Oh, is that how that scam works? You know? And you make great connections, great networking. You know the guy's for real because he's in jail for armed robbery. And you're in jail for armed robbery. Hey, what a coincidence. Maybe when we get out, we could plan an armed robbery. Well, they were scared of dogs, even little ones who make noise, because most dogs will protect their family, but they could fake a dog out a little bit. I mean, dogs psychologically are not easy to scare if that dog can smell the aggression and fear coming off of somebody. But some of them are, you know, they can be fooled. What they were intensely afraid of, was an armed homeowner. It didn't matter if it was an old lady or a middle-aged, out-of-shape guy or some teenage kid who's got the family rifle. They were scared to death because they knew that the imperative of fighting for your home trumps everything else, fighting for your family, you know, you're going to be suddenly facing a fury that is impossible, that you're going to die if you face this fury. And they'll do what most criminals do, which is surrender or run away. So are they bringing in, under the guise of bringing in children, lots of scary, dangerous people too? Yeah, absolutely. But think of the numbers. Think of the numbers and what they can affect. And if they want to start some stuff, I would not recommend they come to any of the malls around my area, because there's been some talk, and this is actual vetted intelligence information. I thought it might happen on the day of 9/11. I was scared that this might happen. I thought, I don't know how many guys these are here. If they really wanted to, they could do a lot of damage at a shopping mall, especially around a shopping day, you know, like a holiday or something. All those people just out, unaware, you know, put a lot of terror into this country. But if they want to try anything around our way, they'll find that in those malls that actually have people in them, because the economy is so bad, there's a few, maybe more than a few, because, hey, if it's concealed carry, you can't really tell, armed men and women. And I guarantee you that if they start some shit there, if they start firing AKs, they're going to be facing somebody who is going to do anything that's required to take the criminal's life away from them. For no other reason than it's the right thing to do.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time, and I got a couple more quick topics, maybe just one we'll have time for, is that one of the things, since you'll be watching it, but just to kind of give you a heads up on some of the things he'll be talking about and see if you agree, is one of the things is he talked about is how the church, and I'm starting to think there may be some validity in this, even with the Catholic Church, that that they've been co-opted by some, you know, the some of these groups. You've mentioned a lot about how there's these different pro-family groups that are actually, whether they know it or not, are supporting you know, this movement to try to you know, create, I guess, a new revolution in America. And he said, even, and he gave some examples, and it does need to have some further research on it, where, you know, he said there's a lot of big name, you know, pro-family folks who, you know, whether they're unwittingly or they actually know that they're a part of it. So do you think in some ways, I mean, cause from my understanding, I've seen some Catholic churches here in America actually taking in some of the illegal immigrants or volunteer to take in some of those illegals. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, it's absolutely true that the Catholic Church, among other groups, have been acting as sanctuaries for people who are illegal immigrants. For two reasons,
yeah.
And one reason is valid, which is a moral imperative. I don't agree with them, but they say, got to help people wherever you can help them. My question to those people would be, why do you have to help them by bringing them into America instead of bringing decency into their lives? And they come back with,
well,
it's a practical matter. Well, as far as a practical matter goes, how long will we retain our liberty if we give it away? To the point where we don't have it.
Right,
anymore.
And then we'll be good to nobody.
All right. The next thing that they use, which is, again, it has a validity, even though it's completely wrong in my view, and you'll find this in a lot of religions, is the idea that we transcend national borders, that it's bigger than national borders.
Right.
So true. However, every single religion in the world has to operate within, you know, what's Caesar's. What the country requires. There are some places where, if you're a Catholic priest, like in Poland in the 70s, you could end up in prison. There are some places, like in Latin America, where if you're a Catholic priest, you could end up shot to death. In Mexico today, if you're a Catholic priest and you stand up against the cartel because what they're doing is evil, they'll shoot you to death. Okay, they don't shoot you to death in this country. Even if we haven't even had one case that I'm aware of where there might have been one where a Catholic priest who had been part of that pedophile ring that they finally seem to have stopped. And it's not the church's fault. It's the individuals who corrupted the church. Nobody's
yeah,
even
and
tried
I think,
to assassinate
I think a lot of
them.
That was blown out of. Yeah, and I think that was a lot of people,
not
a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon to try to get some money, but.
Yeah, but it was very, very real, and it's happened. Penn State happened recently here. Cash for Kids. There have been any number of situations where you have small influential group of people who are sick, twisted individuals who work together to be able to do wrong things, especially to those who cannot protect themselves and then cover it up. There weren't the majority of priests doing this, certainly, but that minority was large enough, and they were not only covered up, but they were aided and abetted in this. They were sent to new parishes without the word coming out. This has come out in direct court testimony, not just of the victims, but of the priests themselves. It's a fact, and it was a really shameful event, but it doesn't mean you condemn the entire Catholic Church. The Catholic Church, recall that there are places in the world where there is no, practically speaking, any Catholic Church. Places like China, where good luck being a Catholic. They will cause you problems. Or Europe, where the cathedrals are practically empty. And they need to ask themselves on a practical matter, if there are no borders and borders don't matter, then do they really want what is happening in those other borders? Or if you happen to be a Maronite Catholic, a Maronite, which is a form of Catholicism in Syria, what do you think that the ISIS fighters, the ISIS murdering terrorists, bastards are doing if they find you? They paint that nun on your house, that N. You might have seen that shape, folks out there. It's an Arabic letter, which is an N. It's kind of a swoopy semicircle that's like a smile almost with a dot in the middle. And what that N means is Nazarene, which means someone who follows Jesus. They paint that on your house. That means they're going to be back to take what you got, rape what you have, kill you. That's what they do. So if it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. Now, that does leave a large number of people who are involved in the sanctuary movement who aren't in it for those ideological reasons, but because they are not thinking clearly. They're thinking with their heart, which is not a wrong thing. But you've got to engage your head, too, and think about what's best. Just like you want to save the child that's broken through the ice and the turbulent water. Yes, your heart tells you, yes, it is important. You might even decide to completely risk your life and go in after him, even though you could die. Or you might want to use your head and not just throw your life away. Form a human chain. Grab a tree branch. Okay? Get something that floats. The last thing you want to do is grab some stranger off the street or your own child or any other child and put them at risk to save the one that's already at risk. So the guy's right. But I don't think that they have as much commitment. And let's not forget that a lot of these sanctuary groups get material support from the government. All it will take is a little bit more power in Congress and taking back the Senate, and that funding can go away. Let's just see how committed they are when they don't get $6,000-$8,000 a month for taking care of these kids apiece. Let's see if they get nothing where their hearts are.
That will be interesting indeed. That's a good point. I believe he hints at that as well. I believe he hints at that, and that's a good point, because they're actually getting money from the government. It's like they get to pick and choose when they want to have separation of church and state, doesn't it?
Well, there's no such thing as separation of church and state, and there shouldn't be. That's like saying that if I need to separate my civic group from the state. I have a volunteer fire company. Does that mean that they don't deal with the state? No, they do, and they should, in specifically defined areas. The local township does not tell us, they don't set fire ordinances, and they don't tell us what we should or shouldn't do as a fire company. On the other hand, we support them in any activities that deal with fire-related matters, emergency matters. They support us in the same way. There can be other groups that have nothing to do with civic stuff, like the Girl Scouts. My daughter was a Girl Scout. I don't like the leadership of that organization anymore, because they become progressive.
Right.
And
I remember that when I was trying to sell Girl Scout cookies with my daughter.
But the good thing is, I mean, they overlapped. There's a senior citizen center that is highly subsidized by the government, that you have all these old people, and you know, it's like an assisted living type situation. It's a high rise. And they're really nice people. They're just really old and they're tired. And a lot of them are lonely. And they have very little spark left in life, unfortunately. And one of the things the Girl Scouts did, and there's another thing they did I'll mention in a moment, but one of the things they did is they would go in there and sing. And they would bring them cookies. And then we went back there as part of another group that was through the school and sang as part of the choir for these kids. A different set of songs. And then there was another group, a church group, that went in there different times of the year and sang and sat with them and you know, made them little artworks and stuff and little treats. It was just a nice little way of saying to an elder generation, we still value you. We still care. And nothing perks up an older folk than, you know, little kids and pets. Just, you know, there's love there. And it reminds them of what their life was about. And it was beautiful. And those are three ways that our lives overlapped that had government involvement. So to tell me that that you can't have church in state, well, I don't belong to an organized church at this point or a synagogue or any other sort of thing. It's not my thing right now. It's fine. But if you do, does that mean that you can't decide on your own because you're part of this group that you think that fighting the murder of babies is important, that if you get involved with that, suddenly you're not allowed to because isn't that establishment of atheism as a religion?
Good point. Good point. Actually, I hate to say this, but it's about that time where I get ready to start wrapping things up because we only have about 7 minutes left of the extended period. Tell you what, I have to say this night it went really fast. Tonight's 3 hours went really fast. I must admit. So yeah, we'll give some just don't even know if we have that for some minutes for parting thoughts. So I just have to tell folks about next week when we will have the founder of Oath Keepers on Stuart Rhodes, and then after that we will have the father of Michael Strange, well, Stephen Strange, who is the father of one of the SEAL Team 6 that was responsible for getting Osama bin Laden. That was the mission. And then, of course, we know shortly afterwards that they were on a helicopter, which was taken down over in Afghanistan, and leave a lot of questions, and yet one more scandal to add to Obama's increasing list of scandals. But unfortunately, we're still going to be stuck with him for another couple of years, unless there is impeachment, which perhaps once the Senate becomes the other party, there may be, but I mean, I don't know. That's a topic for another show, Dan. I think we could definitely talk about the possibilities of an Obama impeachment, especially if the Senate goes to the Republicans. But as I said, I still somehow thought would happen. But we'll see. So we're looking forward to having those guests on next week. Of course, I want to thank everyone for coming on, especially our guests from Chepotin. And definitely check them out at www.chepotin.com, and that's chepotean.com. And so, Dan, if you got just a 1 minute to sum things up for you, and then I'll have to close things out.
It seems almost silly to say with a format. I don't know what to tell people except that there's so many ways that you can get involved. I would have never thought of doing a comic strip. And I got the chance to look at the Chepo Team comic, Chepotean, Chepo Team, two words, .com. The artwork is really, really good. The stories are really, really good. It's really put together nicely. It's entertaining. And it's very good politics. And this is a really – I just got friended today. I just noticed this on Facebook. Some younger folk, some young guy, I think he's still in high school or something. He's working a job at a big box store someplace, probably a night guy or whatever he's doing. I don't know. But seems like a nice young fella. And I thought, well, gee, I'm going to preach to him. I'm an old dude. I'm boring to a guy like that. But maybe not that boring because he decided to – asked to be a friend on Facebook. So I said, hey, dude, check this out, chepoteam.com. And, you know, is it the only way? No. Is it the best way? For some people, find your way. Whatever that is, find your way. If you're a follower, follow. Find someone good and follow them. If you're a leader,
right.
Find some people and lead them.
And also, I'll have to chime in and close it out, Dan. Thank you very much. You know, I hate to interrupt you, but or anyone else, but unfortunately, we have to, or things are going to get shut off, as we've had in the past. I'm trying to control things more on that way. So anyway, I want to thank everyone again, and then, of course, share the link to the Shepherd team as well as the link to tonight's show, so we can get out the information and get more people to check the Shepherd team out as well. And so I will end tonight, as I do every night, and that is with the song from Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. So thanks to everyone who stayed with us the entire time, and we will see you next week. So take care, and good night.